DC Comics Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
I'm doing fantastic tonight, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing good, pretty good. We have been talking about doing a special off-kilter episode for quite some time.
Bizarro episode.
Yes, it's very bizarre.
we should have done the introduction in Bizarro talk, actually.
Well, no, I can't handle reading that, so talking like that is a no-go for me. Unless I have a couple of beers, then maybe.
Musings, Marvel Comics podcast.
Stop. But to do this bizarro episode, we brought in a special guest, a returning guest to the podcast, Scott from the Suicide Squadcast. Scott, how are you?
I'm good. It's weird talking Marvel. Like I don't get to do this ever.
Our listeners are like, what the hell are you guys doing? I didn't sign up for this. too bad. It's our podcast. We can do what we want. So here we are. No, but I thought it'd be fun because, for what, 364 days of the year, we're talking in DC. So let's change it up and see how the other guys across the street are faring in our opinions. So that's what we'll do.
Well, as one of the podcasts on my network is fond of saying, it's okay to like them all.
It really is. It really truly is. And I think fandom would be a lot better if we just were able to coexist and not be jerks to each other. But so that's hopefully what we're getting across with this episode as well, because I think it's fair to say we do like Marvel, just our hearts are with DC, but Marvel is definitely, they're a nice snack while we're waiting for the 5-course meal. DC is, I like to say. I have a racier analogy, but this is PG, so we'll keep it we'll keep it clean. What I thought we'd do, since there are several avenues of Marvel to discuss, we will do Jordan brought it up off air, and we all three of us seem to have gotten into Marvel in the same vein via animation. So we'll touch on that for a bit. And then we'll transition into the non-MCU Marvel properties and some of the films that have been begotten from those studios. And then we'll move into some MCU talk. So with that said, let's talk about how we came into Marvel. So Scott, you are the guest of honor. So what was your first exposure to Marvel?
It's called Fox Kids Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can't talk about Marvel animation without first talking about the X-Men cartoon from Fox Kids on Saturday. I mean, oh my God, almost everything I ever learned about X-Men, I learned from that cartoon. And then, of course, there was the lesser series that followed soon after, but still enjoyable, which was Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then... there was also they were syndicated, so they were harder to catch. But there were two season cartoons that kind of worked together. And there was Fantastic Four and Iron Man, and then eventually an Incredible Hulk cartoon that were all like syndicated weird times that didn't quite, you know, like they could change randomly and you just didn't know when it was going to be on. But once again, everything I know about Fantastic Four, I learned from that cartoon. Everything I knew about Iron Man, I learned from that cartoon. It was the same thing. It was like my introduction to Marvel were all these various cartoon series that launched in the early 90s, starting, I believe, X-Men was 1992, which is weird because it was the same year that Batman the Animated Series came out on Fox Kids. So it was like Fox Kids was like the network to watch.
It
was like – all this awesome animation. And then that's what got me into comic book collecting, because I'll be honest, my comic book collecting when I was a kid was primarily Marvel. I mean, it was it's a shock to think about that now, but I collected Batman and then Spider-Man and X-Men. And I have long boxes downstairs of 90s X-Men and 90s Spider-Man with going back and grabbing some 80s Spider-Man to fill in some gaps. Because I have some treasures downstairs that I'm very proud of, actually.
So you probably have some of the Jim Lee X-Men stuff, correct?
I do. I actually have all the covers of that X-Men number one.
Oh,
That was Jim Lee, Chris Claremont.
Yeah.
I've got the cover that has the fold-out cover of all of them, but yes. I also have all the individual ones that if you laid them out, you could make the cover. Yeah,
yes,
so I've got,
yes, cool.
I got all that. I have all of Fatal Attractions. Mm-hmm. I've got, you know, Spider-Man-wise, I have like...
McFarlane Spider-Man, right? In there?
I've got the issue of, I think it's... I don't know if it's Spectacular Spider-Man or Peter Parker Spider-Man. The issue where he gets rid of the alien costume,
yes,
by going to the bell tower, I have that.
Okay, cool. So you got the scene from Spider-Man 3 before it was put in that movie.
I also have all 12 issues of Secret Wars, including, yes, issue number 8, which is the origin story of the black costume.
Oh, wow.
That one took me a while, but I finally tracked one down
that I was
willing to pay for.
That's awesome. Good stuff. Much like you, Scott, it was the animated series, both X-Men and Spider-Man, that really, that was my knowledge of Marvel anything at that point. And I just love that X-Men series. And actually, I've gone back just because me and my friend have gotten nostalgic every year that passes by. So we've gone back and started rewatching it. And it's just amazing in how they adapted some seminal storylines from the comics.
The Dark Phoenix saga is still like the, yeah, dang. I also feel like that's when the show needed to stop. Like,
yeah,
the quality of the show declined after the Dark Phoenix saga.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. But you know, that anime, I enjoyed the animation style. I know a lot of people criticize it, but back then I was like, I'm into it. And even now I can watch it and say, all right, I can still get down with this. And then, with, you know, that theme song was just, I mean, stuck in your head as a kid.
I'm 36 and I can still sing that. I can still play that song.
It's been my ringtone at a few points throughout the course of the years. And then, the 90s Spider-Man was for me my Spider-Man cartoon. I mean, I'd seen the 60s one where he was swinging by the same building over and over and over again, and it was cool and whatnot, but that one was really my version of Spider-Man. Not gonna lie, as a youngster, I found Black Cat and the way she was drawn very attractive. So that probably played into some of it. That's where my knowledge of Morbius came from, which is now relevant because Jared Leto is going to be playing Morbius, but maybe we'll touch on that a little later. So I was fascinated by both those characters. Now, as much as I love those, you know, my hierarchy was Batman the Animated Series, X-Men, and then Spider-Man.
Agreed.
Because nothing was touching Batman the Animated Series. It's just, no. Even back then, I was like, okay, DC's up here, and then, yeah, okay, I'll give those other guys a try. And then comics has been more in my adult life in terms of Marvel, because it's been predominantly DC, and then I said, okay, I'll branch out with a couple titles of certain characters that I'm a fan of. So I can't say that I mean, I've been going back and collecting, you know, important issues, you know, back issues. I've been saving up and picking up some stuff. So my Marvel stuff is more current within the last, you know, 10, 20 years, but I have been going up and picking up some back issues that are influential, or I just, you know, dig the artist or the storyline. But Jordan, what about you? You're in a different place than both Scott and I, because you're a little younger. So what is your intro into Marvel?
Yeah, well, my intro into Marvel, I guess, technically isn't animated, but for me, animated is where, like, it wasn't my introduction, but animation is where I really, that was the first thing I ever truly, truly loved that Marvel did. And that's the Spectacular Spider-Man animated series.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up.
That's Greg Wiseman, right?
Yes, it is.
That was great. Oh, yeah. As soon as you say Greg Wiseman, you're like, stop. I mean,
Batman. Two of the greatest superhero cartoons ever with, I mean, well, he worked on The Batman, first of all, which is my all-time favorite anime.
You have to mention that every episode.
I have to mention it every time. And I was, even if we didn't get into talking about Greg Wiseman, I was going to bring it up because the reason I started watching The Spectacular Spider-Man was because it aired in the same, at least originally, for the first season, it aired in the same programming block as
yes,
The Batman.
Yes, it did. I remember that. Yes.
Yes, on Kids WB and then the CW for Kids. And I would get up every well, here in Atlanta for the CW affiliate, they'd air it on Sunday mornings, their programming block on the CW. And so I'd get up. I would be so excited for The Batman that I'd get up at like 6 a.m. and I'd watch the entirety of the programming block, every show, waiting for Batman. And The Spectacular Spider-Man was just amazing, and it's one of my favorite things that Marvel's ever done. I just adore The Spectacular Spider-Man.
That is a fantastic series, especially when you actually stop and be able to watch the entire show in order, which took a while until they finally released the complete series on Blu-ray. Because before, like, they would only release like those, here's four episodes on a DVD. And I'm like, what are we in the 90s and VHS tapes? Seriously?
And I won one of those, actually. The CW for Kids had a contest where you could win a Spider-Man action figure and a Spider-Man DVD. So I have like the first four episodes on DVD that I won in a contest. And I also collected, like, they actually did Happy Meal and Burger King promotions. And I collected like a bunch of the toys from both of those.
Well, it was such a – I mean, it's Greg Wiseman. I mean, yes. For me, you say Greg Wiseman, I'm just like, I'm there. Like, whatever he does. Because it was Gargoyles.
Oh,
I mean,
Gargoyles is great as well. Oh, my God.
I mean, well, you tell me that he's the guy who basically ran Gargoyles, and then he did Spectacular Spider-Man, and then he goes and does Young Justice, and I'm just like, I will follow you wherever you go.
Hey, don't forget the Batman, Scott. Don't forget the Batman.
I'm going to be honest with you. I was – well, and that's a thing, but it's the shows that he runs that he doesn't treat it like it's a kid's show. He just treats it like it's a show, and like every show that he's the showrunner on, just the level is just risen on those shows that he works. And Spectacular Spider-Man is, if you're talking about animation, oh yeah, that's hands down like my favorites. Like, that's one of my favorite versions of Spider-Man. Is that show, because the animation was consistent. The writing is serial. It's a serialized show where you have to watch the episodes in order, and it was intriguing to me because I remember there was one episode where like the entire episode is like bookended by people quoting Shakespeare, like they're auditioning for the school production. And I was like, there's Greg Wiseman bringing in the Shakespeare again, like he did in Gargoyles. And so, oh no, Jordan, respect. I was, if someone wasn't bringing that show.
Yeah, we're going to disrespect you in a minute, but for now.
This is the one time, Jordan, take it. It's the one time you're going to get it from me tonight. There you go. Because
in about 5 minutes, you're going to get railed on.
There's going to be something. Jordan's going to say something. I just know it. I love you, Jordan. You're going to say something that's going to tick me off. I just know you are. But no, I'm glad you brought it up, because if someone else wasn't going to bring it up, I was not going to let us pass without mentioning Spectacular Spider-Man.
Is it me or is the animation on every show that he showruns phenomenal? Because it seems like that.
Yeah.
There was generally, Gargoyles just had like, there was always like the random episode, kind of like Batman the Animated Series, where there was always that episode that you're like, oh, you got the studio that you got that studio to do that episode. But no, you're right.
It's pretty much, you know,
it's good quality animation.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. And so, yeah, good call out to that one, Jordan. We gotta get
Thank you. Yeah, I had to mention it. It's my favorite. So yeah.
Now, technically, if we're looking through the modern history of Marvel movies, you know, a lot of people point to, well, you know, there's a debate. Oh, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man was really the kickoff. And then others will counter with Bryan Singer's X-Men was really.
Oh, hold on. Are we moving on to movies already? Oh, yeah. Can I mention one more animation thing?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Which is, I want to shout out the current Marvel Spider-Man animated series that I'm, it's no spectacular Spider-Man, but I'm really digging the, I don't know if either of you guys are watching it.
I'm behind, but I'm enjoying what I'm seeing. Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
You talking about the one on Disney XD?
Yeah.
Okay.
Spectacular Spider-Man was on Disney XD too, technically, in the second season.
In the second season, right. Yeah. I watched – it's gone through several iterations. Like, it's one of those things that, like, every time it gets a new season, like, the title of the show changes.
Oh, no, that's
– No, you're thinking of Ultimate Spider-Man. Ultimate.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. That – okay, if we're not talking about Ultimate, then no, I've not seen this most current version.
Yeah, no. The current one, it's pretty consistent with, you know, in terms of title, animation, storytelling. It's relatively new. I think they're in there. If I
– season two.
Episode 5 okay. of season 2. It's pretty good. Like Jordan said, it's not of the level of Spectacular Spider-Man, but it's pretty solid.
Okay.
But so I'd recommend it if you and the kids want to catch up, go for it.
Okay.
But is that it? Was that it, Jordan, in terms of animation?
Yeah. I just wanted to give that a shout out because I'm really enjoying that show.
Yeah, it is pretty good. I will give it props for that. But in terms of live action movies, there is always, you know, I see it every so often online. You know, there's the banter of, oh, well, Spider-Man really kicked it all off. And then others will counter with Bryan Singer's X-Men. But if you really want to get technical.
Oh, no, I know where you're going.
The first Marvel film that kicked off this epic age of comic book movies that we're now enjoying is Blade.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I love that movie. I love that movie.
And Scott and I are the same individuals in the room that enjoy that movie. And then we have Jordan, who I said was going to say something in a minute that was going to get him in trouble.
Did not take long, did it?
And sure enough, here we are. We're at the point. But
16 minutes. I'm looking at the town. We're at 16 minutes, and now we get to start, you know, the Jordan bashing. There we go.
I think I'm going to start a counter every episode. Thanks for that. Idea, Scott. Every episode, I'm going to put a timer on and just wait till he says something upsetting. I didn't even know when I first sat down to watch it that it was a Marvel movie. But there was just the characters' origins appealed to me. Being a martial artist myself, seeing Wesley Snipes, you know, fight and know that he's able to pull off those moves was appealing to me. I love the mythology, the origin story, and the just the fact that, especially when recent, back then it was different, but in recent years when we have vampire movies where they sparkle and they rarely bite anybody, it's nice to have a vampire movie with, you know, what's the word? What's the polite word that I? Because there's a word I'm thinking of, but I don't know if it's polite. But with it's a vampire movie with bite for a
right. Yeah, there's some bite to it, and yeah. I agree. And the fact that when you kill them, they turn to. It was the idea that they totally turned to ash.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they disintegrated in front of you, which, especially in 1998, those are some pretty dang good special effects for the disintegrations.
Sure. And you got to remember, this is coming the year after Batman and Robin, which, I mean, that's probably why they didn't publicize it as a comic book, you know, based off a comic book movie. Like, it wasn't.
I'd watch Batman and Robin 100 times before I ever watched Blade again.
And this is why you're being sent to the other room. Go sit in the corner.
Did you bring the explosive effect with you, Scott? Can we borrow that?
I will. Dang it! I left it in my other pants. So, but see, Blade appealed to me because, I mean, I knew the Blade character because I've been introduced to him through the Spider-Man animated series because he did show up in one of those Mobius episodes.
Yeah.
But it was the vampire action. I mean, it was a movie. And when we talk about genres, it's one of those movies that while it's based on a comic book, it treated itself more as a vampire movie than a comic book movie. And that was something that was refreshing. And it was one of the first times of, no, we're going to do this in a – we're going to play with the genre. We're going to take a comic book character who's about vampire hunters, but we're not going to shoot it like a comic book movie. We're going to shoot like a vampire movie that just happens to be based on a comic book. Mm-hmm. And I liked, like you said, the martial arts are fantastic. And just the interplay between Wesley Snipes and Kris Kristofferson.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. Yes. I didn't get to make it because, you know, on the Squadcast Network, we have a movies page. We have a Patreon movie Squadcast.
Yeah. We're going through every. I know you can every... make it for that episode. Yeah.
Oh, it was the first episode. Oh. So I just like I wish I could have made it for that one because I sincerely love the first one. Oh, yeah. I don't have the touchy feelies for the second and the third one. And I know a lot of people love the second one over the first one, but for me, it's always been that first one because it has that indie feel. And I also really like Stephen Dorff as the bad guy. I really dug him.
Yeah, and he's made a career out of that now, hasn't he? It seems like he's the bad guy. Everything I can recall him in, he seems pretty much he's the go-to villain. But yeah, he was great. And you're right. The thing that sold me was the interplay really between Kris Kristofferson and
Wesley Snipes.
And Wesley Snipes. Yeah. I was gonna say
Harvey Bullock. Harvey Bullock's in it, so I guess I can give that as my one.
Oh yeah, that's right. Donald Logue is in there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he is in there. Yes, he is.
There you go. I said something nice.
Yes.
There you. That was growth, Jordan. That was growth.
And I lost count on how many times throughout the series, Kris Kristofferson died, and then. Reappears. suddenly, yeah, he's there. He's back. But the first one, you're right, does have that special. And the other thing that makes I enjoyed the second one quite a bit, but I do have an affinity for the first one because it's an origin. It gives you the origin, right? And I'm a sucker for like an origin, first time out kind of superhero tale or story. So apply that to vampires and then, you know, add vampires to that and I'm all in. And so I was reminded of this recently that the director of that film had planted the seeds to put there was an alternate ending that featured Morbius, and he was planning on pursuing that in a sequel, but then he got the sequel went to Guillermo del Toro, and then you had Blade teaming up with the other form of vampires, so they changed the plot, but there was a alternate ending that hinted at Morbius, apparently. I just learned this for the first time the other day, so I found that interesting. But so now that we're getting a Morbius movie, it's fun to know that there were seeds planted for that. And I love, look, as a writer, as an idea man, I love David Goyer. So, you know, he had his fingerprints all over this. So, yeah, the first Blade movie, I'll watch it whenever it's on, and I'll pop it in whenever I get a chance. It's definitely on my Halloween watch list for sure. I watch it every October. So like I said, I enjoyed the second one. The third one, not so great, but it does have one thing that I truly enjoy about it.
And Jessica Biel?
Yes, thank you. I had to.
I'm gonna go ahead and put that out there.
Yeah, you're exactly right. But I also, you know, even though, like I said, it didn't work. But Dominic Purcell, aka Heatwave, is the villain in that movie from Legends of Tomorrow.
So, oh, he's Dracula, isn't he?
Yes.
Okay.
So I gotta give it some props for those two things. And Ryan Reynolds, pre Green Lantern and pre Deadpool, is also involved in the proceedings. So there are some good things. And then you knew it was going down the toilet when they put Triple H in the movie and asked him to act. But it is what it is. Jordan, explain to us, without getting yourself hung up on, why you dislike this movie. Jordan, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, go ahead. I'm giving you the floor. Give us your.
You want me to explain to you what?
Why you dislike this movie?
Why I dislike Blade? I find it just unbearably boring. I find it, I mean, that that's what it comes down to more than anything. I don't find the characters compelling. I don't find the story compelling. Here's the thing about with me. If I start watching a movie, I will never, like, no matter how much I dislike it, I will never turn it off or walk out of the theater, ever. And so I watched that, and this was perhaps one of the five movies that I've ever seen in my entire life that I was the most tempted to do that with. Because I started watching Blade, and about 10 minutes in, I was like, I want to turn this off so badly.
You are kidding me. I'm sorry. The blood rave is something that was such a visually compelling thing to me. And that fight scene in the nightclub was amazing to me. Okay. Different strokes for different folks.
That's right. But everybody has an opinion, no matter how wrong it is.
Okay. Hold on. Before I get in trouble. But opinions can't be. Yeah. It's all subjective. Drink. And opinions can't be wrong. I have to represent.
And we're winking.
Because somebody will come after me.
And we're winking as we say this, but that could be allergies. I'm not sure. All right, Jordan. So you didn't find it. It didn't grab you, eh?
It did not. It really didn't. And I don't enjoy being negative. So I don't feel like it's cool if I don't elaborate any more than that, I guess. It's cool with me if it's cool with you.
But I feel like you've made a good point. If you don't find the characters compelling and the story doesn't grab you, I mean, good. I mean, you've given me your version.
It's a valid reason.
It's a valid reason. If that's what you think, then that's a valid reason. I completely disagree with you, but great. We are allowed to respectfully disagree with one another. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
The internet
thing, isn't it?
It's like the internet does what, despite what the internet tells you, it's okay not to agree with one another. Yeah, it's amazing.
And then we can high five about the spectacular Spider-Man all day long. So,
I disagree with you often, Jordan, and we're still friends, so it's good. But can you at least answer me this? Can you at least appreciate the fight sequences? Can you at least?
Honestly, I don't recall them standing out to me at all.
Okay.
Hold on. Now, Jordan, I'm trying to remember. Generally, how much younger are you than us?
I was born in 98, so the year.
Oh, okay, okay. I think I've landed on because.
Oh, okay.
Wow, I'm like.
Yeah, you and I are very close, Scott. So.
Right, I was born in the early 80s.
Yeah,
I was
83, so I'm.
I was 82, so I'm actually the oldest. I'm the oldest man in this room.
I was one year old when in Wonder Woman 1984. I just want to point that out.
Okay.
I may have a cameo in that movie. I don't know, but I'm out there.
Well,
somewhere.
I think. Well, this is where we get into generational things. I think for you and me, Adam, we had never seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
By the time Jordan's old enough, I mean, he was, excuse me, being the old man, get off my lawn, but he has already been spoiled with so many wonderful things.
That's
like,
true. Yeah.
This is something that we, as people of a certain generation, this was groundbreaking.
Right.
For us.
Yeah.
By the time Jordan sees it, he's just like, it was a movie that came out literally the year he was born. I've seen movies the year I was born.
They don't hold up, some of them, for sure. I get the generational thing, for sure.
Yeah, we're definitely looking at it through different lenses.
From me being a martial artist, I can really appreciate the fact that what went into those, and also having seen some subpar martial arts and Iron Fist, I'm looking at you. I get it, Jordan. I disagree, but I get it.
Yeah, I don't think I realized how much younger you were, and suddenly that just that does provide a perspective. So, okay.
Yeah, all right, cool. Then we can say that after the first Blade, and then we've said pretty much all we need to say about the other two. But the first one was great, in our opinion, and mine and Scott's opinion. But then comes the X-Men, the start of the X-Men franchise. Now this is a tough nut to handle because the phrase X-Men movies and continuity should not be put in the same sentence. Because there is one.
What continuity?
Which one? As Deadpool says, which professor, McAvoy or Stewart? I gotta say that I really, really love Bryan Singer's first two entries into the franchise. That second one, for quite a while, held up as one of the best superhero movies I had ever seen.
That Wolverine Lady Deathstrike fight.
Yeah, it was amazing. And the whole attack on the mansion when he goes into the berserker rage.
I mean, there are just so many key moments in that second one. I mean, not to shortchange the first one, but it was the first one, and it was the experiment, and it's very kind of low key compared to
low key.
Don't do that. I mean, you still have the benefits of the first one of getting Patrick Stewart as Xavier and Ian McKellen as Magneto, and basically you just want to watch those two on screen all day.
Yes.
But it is the second one that you just go.
From a visual and quote unquote comic book aspect of it, the second one was you know, superior. And I'm also a sucker for Nightcrawler. So anytime I can see him, you know, bamfing in and out of the White House, and you know, it was a nice nod to Superman 2 with the White House fight, and there were so many things that called back to, you know, that Bryan Singer called back to the Donner films, and then we know where that went. But for now, for those movies, I thought they worked quite well.
Superman Returns is a great movie.
Well, great. I'll give it props, but I won't say great. But that's not this podcast. We'll argue about that in another episode, for sure. But no, yeah. So that second one just blew me away, and I do got to give him props for what he was able to do on a $75 million budget with that first one. And that first one was actually filmed here in Toronto, so I kind of have an affinity for it because I can. There's the mansion that they used. The interior of the mansion is a locale here in Toronto, and I've been there. So every time I go through the stables, I'm like, damn right, I'm walking where Professor X wheeled, which is great. So those first two really, really sort of set the bar. And the third one for me had potential, but it was a mishmash of two storylines that equally could have deserved their own film.
I will never forgive the third one. I will never forgive the third one for what it did to the Dark Phoenix story.
Yeah, it was it was just such a truncated bastardization. Is that fair?
That is very fair, and on such a small scale.
Yeah.
For a story that is supposed to be cosmic. And so I remember X-Men 3 being one of those movies. Very rarely do I do this, but I remember X-Men 3 being one of those movies that I walked out of the theater going, well, that sucked. But it's very, I mean, I am such a Pollyanna. It's like, the thing is, I'm not one of those people who go into a movie saying, okay, prove to me why you're good.
Yeah.
You know, I go into a movie ready to enjoy it, and I have to be like shocked.
Yeah, same here.
I have to be shocked at how bad you are. For me to walk out going, well, that sucked. And I felt that way about the third one. And then it just got progressively worse from there. But those first two, I still remember the hype being so real in the summer of 2000, because that was when the first one came out, because that was the summer between graduating high school and starting college.
Yeah.
So it, the first one landed at a very key time in my life. And I remember the buildup to it. I remember talking to everybody when Doug Ray Scott got injured on Mission Impossible 2 and he wasn't going to be Wolverine anymore. And then you hear that they're getting this unknown Australian actor to be Wolverine. And you're like, who the heck is this guy?
Yeah. And surprise, there was an early internet freakout even back then over Wolverine. Shocking.
I know. Shocking that there would ever be a freakout about you casting. And then I saw it, and I was just like, even in that first movie, I was just like, never mind.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Hugh Jackman already impressed in the first one. And then I still remember watching a Today Show interview the Monday morning after opening weekend, and Katie Couric was interviewing Hugh Jackman. Mm-hmm. And then she goes, And, you know, you're a musical theater guy. You know, you just got finished doing Curly in Oklahoma. And I was like, what?
Oh, yeah.
And then here's Hugh Jackman sitting there talking about scars he has from, you know, the claws. And all of a sudden starts going, when the corn is as high as an elephant's eye. And he starts singing, Oh, What a Beautiful Morning on the Today Show. And I'm just like, well, okay then.
Yeah, and when you watch him in other, you just realize how good he is in so many different roles. He's phenomenal, and I think, you know, his casting, it's on par with, you know, some of the greatest ones
in
cinema. You got Chris Reeve, you got Heath Ledger. I'm gonna throw Henry Cavill in there because I love Henry Cavill as Superman, and if you don't, I don't care.
But it's one of those things where you just go, how did you find somebody?
Yeah.
We thought he was great in that first movie, yeah. But then to realize that he would go on for another 17 years.
That's insanity.
Playing this character, leading up into a movie that. If we're talking about all of the Fox X-Men franchise.
We're going to go through it.
Yeah, if you're going to talk about that, I mean, it is my number one ranked X-Men. I mean, I'm going to go and say it. Logan is still my number one of the X-Men franchise. Logan is my number one.
All right, cool.
And it's just because it's amazing to see a man at the beginning of his career with a role and a man at the end of his career with a role.
Yeah, it's phenomenal when you watch the whole series through, you know, barring some of the disappointments, just focusing on him and his run through is phenomenal. There's also a YouTube video that takes care of that and cuts out most of the junk. So I recommend looking that up if you don't want to sit through some of the bad stuff. But just before we go on to the sort of requel or whatever you want to call First Class, Jordan, what is your opinion of, let's say, how would you rank the first three? Like, where have you seen all three first?
I've only seen the first two.
Oh, okay. Well, so
okay. Oh, good for you. Good, good for you.
I don't recommend seeing number three. Skip it.
And it's been at least 10 years, maybe even 12 years since I've seen them.
Do you enjoy those two movies?
I recall enjoying them. I don't recall loving them, but I recall enjoying them.
Okay. Right. Well, I think that's fair. I mean, especially with what came, X2 I think still holds up. But the first X-Men movie, I don't rank terribly high in my X-Men ranking, so I can respect that opinion.
Yeah, no, X2 was like I said, it was the anticipation leading up to it, and then the fact that, you know, remember we had to wait 3 years, and there wasn't a superhero movie every 6 months. There was this long period where we had to wait 3 or 4 years. You know, if we got two in the span of a year, we were lucky back in those early days. And so, but now going on to the sort of, like I said, the revitalization, if you will, of the franchise, because I'm going to choose to skip over X-Men Origins Wolverine completely and just pretend that it's some sort of anomaly. How would you rank, and what are your thoughts on First Class, Days of Future Past, and Apocalypse?
Okay. First Class, I had no expectations of going into whatsoever. So yeah. I was pleasantly surprised at how enjoyable First Class was.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it flew under the radar. I felt like I do not remember there being a lot of buildup to First Class. It was one of those more like, oh, it's an X-Men movie. I'm going to go see an X-Men movie. And so I wasn't expecting a whole lot. But then when they do a shot for shot reshoot of the Auschwitz scene from the first X-Men movie and then continue it and you get to see. And I had no idea Kevin Bacon was in this movie.
Yeah.
Not a clue. So when he shows up as Sebastian Shaw playing in a decent German accent, because I actually took German in high school.
Okay.
So I was sitting here going, Not bad, Kevin Bacon. Not bad.
Yeah.
That whole opening scene with young Eric in Auschwitz with Kevin Bacon, I was sitting here going, well, this is not what I was expecting. And, you know, and then getting like Hellfire Club, and even while January Jones isn't like the most interesting actress to watch, she's still interesting to look at.
Yes, I agree with that. That's a fair assessment. Yeah.
And I thought it was more, I appreciated the 60s aesthetic, and it was all of a sudden much more comic booky than any of the previous films. So I give mad respect to First Class.
Yeah.
However, Days of Future Past was like a damn boy. Serious? I mean, until Logan came out, Days of Future Past was my number one of all time X-Men movie. So now it's just number two, right under Logan. But the idea of we kind of did this reboot with First Class that we're not really sure how it ties into continuity. Like, does it actually fit with the old film? Like, was it a hard reboot? Was it a soft reboot? Hugh Jackman had the awesome cameo, so it's more like a soft reboot. But then Days of Future Past came out, and it was like, you just pulled the Star Trek. You just pulled the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. You gave yourself an in-story reason to erase every previous movie and do whatever the heck you want going forward. And from a writing standpoint, I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was an amazing way of being able to take the films forward and be able to erase the hodgepodge of continuity that had not existed beforehand and say, we're kind of starting from scratch now, but still respecting the past. That's why I think Days of Future Past. Plus, the Days of Future Past, just the title, that story holds such a special place in my heart, from the two-part episode in the cartoon to I actually own the two issues that story was told in Uncanny X-Men. Mm-hmm. So and I'm a sucker for a time travel story. I'm sorry. Time travel is one of my favorite MacGuffins.
Yeah, I'd agree with
so,
that.
So I was so cool with that. Apocalypse, I've only seen once in the theater. I own it because I will buy these movies. I own X-Men Origins Wolverine. What can I say? But it was the problem was it was a follow-up to Days of Future Past. It was kind of like, sorry, you didn't have a shot.
No matter what they did, I think you're right, David.
So I need to go back and rewatch Apocalypse and give it a fairer shake. Because I think it also came out the same year as BVS and Civil War. Yes. So yeah. I was kind of feeling a little fatigued at that point. It was just like, I don't know if I can take this anymore. It's like, and I don't feel like I have given it its due. But I just remember walking out of Apocalypse going, That's how I felt about time I've seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it twice, and I would echo those sentiments. I do want to echo your sentiment on First Class. I had zero expectations going in because I was burnt by The Last Stand and Wolverine Origins. So I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this because I like the X-Men group, so I'll give it a go. But the 60s aesthetic worked for me. The shot-for-shot Auschwitz thing worked for me. And most importantly, I think McAvoy and Fassbender were able to match, and what Stewart and McKellen had. So I thought, okay, well, you've got me again. And then, like I said, they gave us characters that we hadn't seen before, and it was a new spin. We got the Wolverine cameo, like you said. But I'm a sucker for like I like 60s set movies. I like movies set in the past. So I was digging it. And if you can get me, if you can have Magneto make me emotional, you're doing something right. And I was in tears several times with where Magneto's story took itself and went. So I got to give the film props for that. I'm going to agree 100% with what you said on Days of Future Past. Up until Logan, it was my favorite X-Men movie. So, yeah, I mean, much more praise than that I can't give it. And then you're spot, even though you've only seen it once, you're spot on Apocalypse. Jordan, have you seen any of the three recent?
Nope.
Okay, so you can't speak to this.
I cannot speak to them.
I would suggest these are good ones.
Watch those two. Yeah.
Oh, yes. I do. I want to check them out. I just have not gotten around to it yet.
All right, cool. Fair enough. But you can see, knowing your taste, I don't know. You may want to give Apocalypse a try. You might think it's the best of the three, knowing you. So go for it. But
we should just write unpopular opinion on Jordan's head and just walk him out.
He could get a tattoo and it would work. But I know there's one franchise that you are caught up on, Jordan. And that is the Spider-Man franchise.
Yes. Spider-Man's my guy when it comes to Marvel.
Right. I
think all three of us are going to agree there. But so the Spider-Man franchise began in 2002 with Sam Raimi and Tobey Maguire and Willem Dafoe. And then
the hype was real in 2002. Can I tell you? It was. The hype was real.
That was the year. It's funny because Jordan's going to love this callback. It was the combination of that and Smallville.
I knew you were going to say that.
That I said to myself, I got to get back into this comic book reading / collecting thing. And now my wallet is screaming at me as I say this. But you were going to say, Scott? What were you going to say?
No, you finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Yeah.
I have the sweetest story to tell about going to see Spider-Man. Go ahead. Okay, I was a sophomore in college. Mm-hmm. I went to a college in the town within the city that I lived. So like I was 30 minutes from home. Like I went home every weekend in college. I was that kid. Okay. But this was back in the time where my dad and I saw all these comic book movies together. Like that was our father son thing. Was every time one of these things came out every 2 or 3 years, we saw it together. It was this and Bond that we always did together. So I still remember saying, Dad, I want to catch the first matinee on opening day of Spider-Man. And so I found out what the time was. And at the time, my dad had a BlackBerry because, 2002. And my dad put a appointment into his BlackBerry that said movie with Scott. And so he was actually talking to a dealer he was a salesman for a company. Okay. And his BlackBerry went off and they're like, hey, and they're like, oh, what? You got another appointment? He said, yeah, I'm going to go see a movie with my son. And so my dad came and picked me up from the college campus, and we went and saw the first Spider-Man together. And I still love the fact that my dad like made an appointment on his BlackBerry and was like, "Peace out, guys! I'm gonna go see a movie with my son."
That's awesome.
That's great.
That's a cool story. I like that. I like those moments. And now you can share those same moments with your son. See how they.
Oh, absolutely. We've already seen Lego Batman and Incredibles 2, so I continue to keep the trend going.
And don't ask Jordan about Lego Batman because you're going to want to choke him. But moving on.
I might not be as high on it as most people, but I do like the Lego Batman.
All right, okay. We're not going to go any further than that because you're going to get yourself in trouble.
I just don't want you misquoting me.
Okay. So tell me about your experience, because, I mean, once again, you're old enough to have actually seen this in the theater. What was your experience?
Who are you talking to?
You, Jordan. My experience was I saw it with a friend of mine, and we that first one, we loved it. I thought it was – and it's, to me, what I'll say, I think Sam Raimi's entire trilogy was trying to capture the 60s era – Spider-Man.
Oh, it's Ditko and yeah, it's yeah. It R.I.P. Steve Ditko.
Unfortunately.
But no, it is you can tell where Raimi's love was, and Raimi's love was with that original Stan Lee, Steve Ditko run, because everything he did in those movies up until Spider-Man 3 for, you know, studio interference reasons, was a love letter to Ditko and Lee.
Yeah. And I mean, I just, the everything from Tobey Maguire's performance, as Peter, really worked for me. You know, his crying was a little awkward, but it got progressively awkward with each film. But aside from that, his performance was really good. And I know people complain about the quote-unquote Power Ranger outfit, which that comparison doesn't bother me because I love Power Rangers, so I'm good with that. But his performance as the Green Goblin and Norman Osborn was phenomenal.
It's Willem Dafoe. I'm sorry. But that was my point. Is that you're saying it was great? I'm like, yes, yeah. It's Willem Dafoe.
Oh, I thought period. I said something else. I'm like, did I not say Willem Dafoe?
No. But my point is that it's Dafoe. You just accept it's going to be amazing.
So he's going to be great as Volko in Aquaman. We're just going to put that out right there. So I love the first one. I thought the second one was even more phenomenal. I mean, that you can rewatch that train sequence and it still looks fantastic to this day.
Are you ready for my unpopular opinion?
You don't like number two?
No, I don't. It's not that I don't like number two. Everyone just wants, oh, I'm gonna get myself in so much trouble. No, Jordan. Hold my beer. I just don't have the love and adoration for number two that other people do.
Fair enough.
To this day, when it comes to the Tobey Maguire movies, number one is my favorite. I don't know if it's just sentimentally my favorite, but I remember watching number two and going, this is fun. This is fun. I enjoy this. But when it was over and everyone afterwards were saying, oh, that was much better than number one. And to this day, you look on the internet and Spider-Man 2 is generally upheld as the greatest Spider-Man movie ever. I disagree with that. I do not have the unabashed adoration for number two that other people do.
I don't know if I see. I've never gone through the process of ranking them. So I haven't had to make that decision. I don't know if I'd rank it as better. That particular sequence was.
Oh no! That sequence is great. Yeah. You know what one of my biggest complaints about Spider-Man 2 is the whole idea of Dr. Octavius not actually being a bad guy, but that he's being influenced by the arms and the arms of what are actually evil. It was like. What it felt like was that we took the dissociative identity disorder of Green Goblin from the first one, which is great because that's what it is in the comics. Like, he does have dissociative identity disorder. Like, that is a thing. But then it was like, we do the same thing with Doc Ock and have him, like, instead of Norman talking to his Green Goblin persona, we have Dr. Octavius talking to his arms. And that's if you're going to land my biggest criticism of Spider-Man 2, it's that nothing gets Alfred Molina, because Alfred Molina killed it.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah,
he was great. But just that story idea of the arms are the bad guy and the arms are like a separate personality from Dr. Octavius. That is my personal biggest criticism of Spider-Man 2.
That's fair. Those are definitely fair criticisms, and I agree with those as well. And then the third one, I mean, okay, let's make this as quick as possible with this third one, because the less time we spend on it, the better. And then we'll get Jordan's thoughts on the first three. I'm not a fan of this particular movie, obviously.
No, I'm not either. It was one of those that I walked out of the movie disappointed. Yeah. Like, I actually walked out of the movie disappointed.
I don't like the retcon to the Uncle Ben shooting.
Not a fan of that. No.
I dug Thomas Hayden Church's Sandman. I thought he was good.
Performance was solid. But I think it's also because if you know the story, the script was originally supposed to be Sandman and Ben Kingsley as the Vulture.
Yes, and that would have been so much better than what we got of Ben Kingsley in Iron Man 3, but we'll get to that shortly, unfortunately. But, yeah, so I agree there. But the visuals for Sandman were great. And then there was Venom.
Which is so heartbreaking because I was a 90s kid. The symbiotes were my jam.
Mm-hmm.
I love me some symbiotes. And this movie was billed as like Spider-Man versus Venom.
Yeah.
And then Venom doesn't show up until like the last 10 minutes. And it's like the lamest Venom ever.
Yeah. I'm in 100% agreement. And I don't think Topher Grace had the stuff to play. No offense to Topher Grace. He's a decent actor.
He was miscast.
Miscast and probably the material. But for me, I will never get tired of seeing J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson. That was brilliant all the way through, even in the worst of the three. And we're going to leave the dancing in the street, in that street, and not to
yes.
So, Jordan, what are your thoughts on the Sam Raimi trilogy?
I really enjoy all three films in the Sam Raimi trilogy, actually.
Wait, you said all three?
All three. I really enjoy all three.
Okay, I thought my ears were acting up. Okay, go ahead.
I don't quite love any of them, actually.
Okay.
We're about to get to the Spider-Man films that I truly, truly adore. But I enjoy all three. I think that they're – I have a lot of nostalgia for all three of them because, I mean, I was really young when these were coming out, so – well, the third one I was a little bit older, but the first two I was really young. Spider-Man, the first Spider-Man might have actually been the first superhero movie I ever saw in a theater, now that I think about it.
Oh, wow. Ooh, okay. Hey, mine was Batman 89, so I
mine
mean...
Mine too.
So,
Cyber high five there, Scott.
But Jordan, as a first superhero movie in theaters, that's... You can't do too shabby... You can't go wrong with Spider-Man 2002.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. So yeah, there's a lot I like about those movies. I love Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin. I love Alfred Molina as Doc Ock. The one thing that does not work for me in the movies is Peter and Mary Jane's relationship. But
I can see that.
Yeah, but I wasn't a fan of Kirsten Dunst personally in those movies.
Yeah. The problem with Kirsten Dunst is she was nowhere near the Mary Jane I grew up with.
Agreed. Yeah.
That was my biggest deal was she was not written, nor was she cast anything like Mary Jane in the comics.
Yeah. Agreed. 100%. But yeah, Jordan, what else did you want to – Any specific you want to touch on, or?
Oh, I guess overall, I would say, yeah. I was just gonna say, overall, I do really enjoy all three of those films, But
did you enjoy the dancing?
I did, but again. But again, like I said, a lot of it, I don't know if that movie came out today, I don't know how I feel about it. But like I have, like I said, I have a lot of nostalgia for it. I was 9 years old when Spider-Man 3 came out, so. I recall that one very vividly. I went to the drive-in theater here in Atlanta to go see that one. So
can I tell you this? That was my dad's first and only midnight release, and it was Spider-Man 3.
Oh,
and
God.
I know my dad was like my dad was not happy.
Poor
and
man. He's like, never again.
No, and actually, you know what? It was my last midnight release.
Oh, okay.
Of course, soon after then, movies started coming out like at like 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock on Thursday nights instead of midnight.
Yeah.
So that was the last. I think Spider-Man 3 was the last time I ever went to a true midnight release of a movie.
You know, Scott, it gets to a point when you get to our because I can say this because we're both the same age. When you get to our age and you're like, I can't stay up for this shit.
I can't stay up this late. I need like sleep. Two cups of coffee.
I need sleep. I can't do this.
Hey, I have a question. A question for both of you, though. Have either one of you seen the editor's cut of Spider-Man 3?
I have not.
I have not either.
Okay. When Homecoming came out last year, they released a Legacy Collection box set.
I saw that.
I got it. I got it from Best Buy because it was a steel book. You get one steel book. It's two steel books and a slipcover. And one steel book has the Raimi trilogy, and the other steel book has the Amazing Movies. And it was a great deal because you got all five movies plus digital copies of all five movies. Plus you get the extended version of Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 2.1, and it came with Spider-Man 3 and an alternate version of Spider-Man 3 called Spider-Man 3 The Editor's Cut. Mm-hmm. And when you redeemed your digital codes, you got all of this. So it was like a one box set where you literally got seven films, five films and two alternate versions. I have not watched it yet, but I've been dying to do like a major Spider-Man rewatch, and that's something out there. Like, I've seen the Spider-Man 2.1, but I've not seen the editor's cut of Spider-Man 3 because I'm all curious, right, what the differences are.
All right, that'd be interesting to look at. Like, I'd sit through it again just to see what the
difference is. I'd love to check that out.
Can you buy it individually, Scott, or no?
If you – okay. On Vudu, because, you know, Vudu, all the alternate versions come separately. You can buy it. If you buy – I believe – someone will have to go and double check me. But I believe if you buy Spider-Man 3 on iTunes, the editor's cut is one of the iTunes extras. Because a lot of times with iTunes, any of those alternate versions of films, they just come included in the purchase price of the theatrical version. Okay. And I believe the editor's cut is an iTunes extra. So depending on who your preferred digital movie vendor is, it may be a separate purchase, or it may be bundled as a special feature on the main film.
All right, cool. We'll look out for that for sure. Jordan, there is a version of Spider-Man that is your preferred favorite.
There is.
That is the Amazing Spider-Man Universe version.
Oh, yes.
So I'll let you kick this off. What are your thoughts on both of those films? You can put them.
I adore the Amazing Spider-Man films. When I first saw The Amazing Spider-Man, I was blown away by that movie. I mean, I had tears in my eyes at the final scene of that movie. I was just so blown away by the movie. The Peter's final line, but those are the best kind. I love Peter and Gwen's relationship over the course of these two films. I just think it's honestly one of my favorite on-screen romances of all time is Peter and Gwen's relationship over the course of two films. And just the way, I mean, just the chemistry that Andrew Garfield and Gwen Stacy have, and the way they build that up. And then, I mean, the tragic of what happens in Amazing Spider-Man 2. But I adore the performances in these movies. I'm one of the few people that seems to adore what they did with the villains in these movies, with both the Lizard and Electro and Green Goblin. I adore all three. These movies are, I saw somebody once describe them as the Notebook with superheroes. And to me, that's probably the most apt description I've ever heard of these movies. And that's one of the things I love so much about them. I adore the suit, both suits, both the first suit and the second suit. And just, I mean, those two movies are my favorite thing that Marvel has ever done in any medium.
So you're talking including the MCU.
Including the MCU, mm-hmm. Yeah. This is my favorite thing that Marvel is, whether it's Fox Marvel, whether it's Sony Marvel, whether it's MCU Marvel, in any medium, this is my favorite thing Marvel has ever done, is those two Amazing Spider-Man films. And I think it's a travesty, even though I like what we've gotten with Spider-Man in the MCU, I think it's a travesty we never got a third Amazing Spider-Man film, because I don't like what we've gotten with Spider-Man in the MCU as much as Amazing Spider-Man, even though I do like it. Right. Those two movies, I put them in the highest regard.
Wow. All right. That's a lot to unpack. Scott, what is your take on The Amazing Spider-Man and The Amazing Spider-Man 2?
I enjoy them. I remember seeing the first Amazing Spider-Man and not being particularly blown away by the movie in general, but the things that I really loved about the Amazing movies, as opposed to the Sam Raimi trilogy, making Peter – like, they they gave lip service to Peter as a science nerd in the Sam Raimi movies.
Right.
In the Amazing movies, they were like, no, this kid is a science nerd. Yeah. This is a kid who builds his own web shooters. He doesn't create the web fluid, but I'm at least glad they let him build the web shooters in yeah. the Amazing as opposed to the organic
and
web shooters.
He created his own suit, right?
Right, and you actually saw where the suit came from, unlike yeah. the Raimi movies where the suit just magically appears.
Yeah.
I love the fact that they made Peter a true science nerd. I love how smartass Spider-Man, like, they got the wisecracking Spider-Man right.
They did, yeah.
In the Amazing movies,
yeah.
Which is something that fell completely flat in the Raimi movies. They did not get the wisecracking Spider-Man quite right. I love what Andrew Garfield was able to do as Spider-Man. The only thing I would criticize is that he was still kind of wisecracky as Peter. And it was like they got the quiet nerd, the more Ditko quiet nerdy aspect of Peter right in the Raimi movies, but they got the science part right in the Amazing movies. And then they got the wisecracking Spider-Man right in the Amazing movies. So that is where I fall on their portrayal of Peter and Spider-Man. Emma Stone is one of my screen wives. So
you have those too. I see. Good, good.
I have several screen wives. We've already covered a couple of franchises already that include my screen wives, because Jennifer Lawrence is one of my screen wives as well.
Good call. Yeah.
So, you know, I have my smorgasbord, but Emma Stone is on there. Mm-hmm. And to Jordan's point, the relationship between Peter and Gwen is the on-screen chemistry is palpable in a way that I just never got it with Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst in the Sam Raimi trilogy. So it just seems so much more natural in the Amazing movies, and I loved that part. So basically your two leads, Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone, were great. Like I said, except for the fact that they made Peter a little bit – because they were updating it, and I understand. They weren't trying to make him 60s Peter. He was just a little bit more wisecracky as Peter than I personally would have liked. But still, they made him a science nerd. They let him build his web shooters. I thought Sally Field was really good as Aunt May. I liked her, even though I loved Rosemary Harris. In Rosemary Harris was like classic Aunt May.
Yeah.
And in the Raimi trilogy. And I remember seeing Amazing Spider-Man 2. You know, granted, I didn't see it until it was at the bargain theater, mm-hmm. you know, where the second run theater where you only pay $1 to go see it. But I remember seeing Amazing Spider-Man 2 at the bargain theater because I just never made it out to see it in this first run. And I remember going, why the hate? Like, I didn't think it was the greatest thing, but I thought the vitriol around it was was hyperbolic and unnecessary.
I agree. Yeah, it's just...
It was a comic book movie. It was very comic. I love the suit in the second one. I feel like the suit in the second one was as close to a awesome, was the closest suit they've ever done.
I like that it was a progression, between the two films.
And the fact that they actually did the death of Gwen Stacy.
Oh, my God. That was
I remember watching it going, F me, they went there. Yeah. Like, they cheated with Mary Jane in the first Spider-Man movie, but they're doing the scene. You think, oh, he's going to save Gwen. And then the snap happens, and I go, oh.
That was
good. Oh, my goodness.
That was gutting.
Every time it gets me bawling, that scene. It's so emotional, so beautifully shot. I mean, it's just devastating.
It speaks to their relationship, like the effectiveness of the relationship, because if the two leads don't work, I mean, yeah, it's a sad moment, and you're supposed to feel sad as a human being in general. But because if those two don't have the connection that they do on screen, the moment loses something. So you really got to give props to the two actors for building up to that.
Um, I I will admit that the villains were less interesting to me in the Amazing Movie. Sorry, Jordan, but it's just the way I felt. Even though I won't trash them the way other people would. I enjoyed the Raimi villains more, and I thought it was interesting that they found a way to incorporate the Peter's parents were super spies story, which did happen in the 70s comics. Of course, they couldn't use it because of the MCU, but they were supposed to be S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. And I thought it was interesting that was incorporated. I felt like it went too far in the second movie, but I liked the fact that they actually bothered to mention his parents. And I'm sorry, you get Campbell Scott to play his dad, and I think Campbell Scott is an incredible actor. So that's where I land. You know, they're good, solid Spider-Man movies that I don't quite have the love for them that Jordan has, but I also don't have the hate for them that other people seem to have for them, that I just don't understand, because they were good, they were decent to good Spider-Man movies.
I think I'm in perfect agreement with Scott on all fronts. I may have to fight you for your on-screen wife there, because she's on my list as well. But aside from that, like, I'm in total agreement. And like I said, I enjoyed both costumes. The two leads were great, and I enjoyed the relationship angle far more between Peter and Gwen than I did Peter and Mary Jane. I think, you know, the villains were a little more fully formed in Raimi's trilogy. To me, the Green Goblin in Amazing Spider-Man 2 is something that's very rushed. And, you know, Jamie Foxx, he's a great actor, but what they had him doing there was almost like a Jim Carrey Riddler-ish from Batman Forever. But again, I wasn't cringing when I was watching it. Just certain things felt rushed in terms of where the villains were. And that the Gwen Stacy moment, as we discussed, was pure, you know, page to screen, and it was heart-wrenching. I want to point out the score, especially for that first one, because to go from Elfman, you know, Elfman at least with his Spider-Man score, I know there's some debate with his Justice League work, but with his Spider-Man scores, I thought he was on point. And then to have who was the composer on the
James Horner?
That's right, yeah.
Well, James Horner did the first one, and then Hans Zimmer did Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Which I thought both were good. The only thing that kind of made me cringe a little bit was the Itsy Bitsy Spider thing. During the Times Square fight, that was a little bit – or was it – I think it was a Times Square fight. But you guys know what I'm talking about. That was the only part of it that kind of irked me. But the rest of it, both scores were great. So I just want to point that out, because we haven't really focused in on the scores. Jordan, are you still okay, or do you have to bounce? Okay, just, Scott and I will take over the Scott and I will take over the MCU, because I know you're not caught up on everything more MCU. But I'm glad we were able to get the Spider-Man, the original five, while you were here.
Absolutely.
We got some of Jordan's Marvel take, and we'll see.
I'll just mention real quick my take on. I can mention my take on Spider-Man in the MCU.
Yeah. Okay. Give us your take, and then we'll take off from there. We'll go from there.
It doesn't make up for the fact for me that they, you know, ended the Amazing Spider-Man series prematurely, because I mean that's at the top of the mountain for me, I guess you could say. But I really enjoyed Spider-Man Homecoming. It's my favorite MCU film. I think Tom Holland brings a great energy to the role, and I just really enjoy him. I think Batman Michael Keaton, I thought he was great as Vulture, and I really enjoyed Spider-Man Homecoming, and I enjoyed Tom Holland in Civil War when he was first introduced, and I have yet to see Infinity War, but I am excited to see Tom Holland in that as well, because like I said, I've really enjoyed him in the role so far. I guess that's my brief thoughts on Spidey and the MCU.
Cool. All right, so we'll take your cue from there and pick up from where you left off. But I'm glad we got some of your insights into your Marvel fandom. So that'll be, and I'm glad the audience got to hear some of it as well.
Absolutely.
But we'll let you go, and Scott and I will take over from here.
Cool. Sounds good, y'all. All right, take care.
We'll talk soon.
Bye.
All right, Scott. So, Jordan led us off with the MCU Spider-Man. Before we go there, do we want to say a few quick words on, and by quick, I mean as quick as possible, because let's not spend too much time on these films, but the Fantastic Four franchise.
I think the least said is the best said.
Okay, so we're in total agreement.
This is what I will say. The first movie is very much in line with, like, Jack Kirby, Stan Lee original. Like, as cheesy and ridiculous as that first movie is, if you want to talk about comic book accurate, it's comic book. It's pretty comic book accurate. Except for Dr. Doom. They've never gotten Dr. Doom right.
Dr. Doom to me was like a half breed between Donald Trump and Vince McMahon, which is wrong.
So that once again, you get to the second movie. Lawrence Fishburne is the Silver Surfer.
Yes.
Good. The giant space cloud that was Galactus. What the heck?
Not good.
And I will admit this: I have yet, and I will never waste my time to see Fan4Stick. I have not seen it. I have made an intentional effort not to see it, so I cannot speak to Fan4Stick. Right. I have heard enough about it to realize that I don't care to see it.
Well, let me just say I agree wholeheartedly with you on the first one. It was very much comic accurate, save for Dr. Doom. So there's a lot of that first one I like. The second one, The Silver Surfer, is fantastic. I enjoy the whole, you know, wedding subplot between, you know, Sue and Reed Richards and the family dynamic. But the cloud, yeah. If there's any disservice to a villain, there are two grand examples in comic book cinema, and that is Galactus and Parallax in Green Lantern.
Well, because they were both giant space clouds.
Exactly. So note to future comic book filmmakers, steer clear of the clouds as villains. But let's get into some of our thoughts on the MCU. Are you currently?
Oh, hold on. I want to bring in Fantastic Four. I want to bring in one.
Oh, sure.
I do not care what anyone has to say, especially if you see the director's cut, which I think is my preferred viewing experience. I have mad respect for Ben Affleck's Daredevil
movie. Oh, yeah. How could I forget Daredevil? Jeez, thank you for reminding me of this.
I mean,
I adore that movie, as even though everybody else hates it. I mean, yeah, apparently you don't as well, so we're in good company. But I enjoy it.
I mean, I remember seeing the theatrical version, because actually, ironically enough, I saw it on Valentine's Day. Like, that was when it came out. Oh, cool. Was on Valentine's Day.
It was.
I saw that movie. I enjoyed the theatrical version for what it was. I thought it had some really it did one thing that I still don't think the Netflix series has done well, which is his blind vision.
That was great.
That was fantastic. I remember some of the choices in the film that I was not a big fan of when the director's cut got released, which, by the way, for those of you who aren't aware, there is a director's cut of Daredevil that is 30 minutes longer and rated R.
Yes.
And it's fantastic. And ironically, it makes at least one key change to an event that happened in the theatrical version that made me groan and roll my eyes that in the director's cut doesn't happen.
You're talking about the swing?
No, I'm not talking about that. Okay. I'm talking about the fact that they go on the roof in the rain and all of a sudden they're getting it on.
They don't
in the director's cut.
That's right.
And it seems so much more organic, and it's really interesting that there's a documentary on the director's cut that talks about the producer interference and the producer producer mandated changes that were made, which is why 30 minutes of plot gets cut out of the movie. Sound like another movie we know. And I'm just saying.
What is it with Ben Affleck and these director cut scenarios where the director's cut is better, is superior? Even though I like, again, here we go. I enjoyed BVS theatrical, but I love the extended cut.
And guess what? Both of them are movies that you take, you you remove 30 minutes of plot and you go from an R rating to a PG-13 rating. I'm sorry, there's a trend here.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie theatrically. I adore the director's cut, especially for the darker bits, like him having to like him hearing a woman dying in the street as he's going to bed because he can't do anything anymore. And it's so much more of an emotional gut punch. And the whole fact of you get to explore Matt Murdock as a lawyer in that 30 extra minutes. And oh my God, the plot actually like makes more sense if you put 30 minutes of story back into it. I've not seen the director's cut of Elektra, but I think Elektra is a dumpster fire. But I've not seen the director's cut. I own it because it came in a digital bundle with a director's cut of Daredevil. So I will watch it one of these days.
Yes.
But I will still say I enjoyed Daredevil. And I remember when people were griping, complaining about Ben Affleck's casting as Batman for BVS. They always brought up Daredevil as their evidence. I was like, excuse me, Ben Affleck was not the problem with Daredevil.
You know, it's funny because I remember I was typing up an article. I can't remember what I was writing, but so I said, let me check the internet just to see what's going on because I need a mental break. And sure enough, that was I in for disaster to follow. That's when I read the casting of Ben Affleck as Batman, and everybody's like, oh no, did you see Daredevil? And I was like, yes, and I enjoyed it. And I think he'll be fine as Batman, thank you very much. And I'm not making this up, and I wish my other friend was here to back me up on this so people would believe me. When we were watching Daredevil in the theaters, I turned to him and I said, and this was before Batman Begins came out, remember? I said, you know, Ben Affleck would make a pretty good Batman. But I said, that's never going to happen. And went on my merry way, and here we are. But I'm with you. I love the director's cut. I thought how you're right, the blindness was done visually was done so well. And the scene where he sees her in the rain, that is one of the most beautifully shot scenes I've seen in one of these movies.
And I love the fact they did the opening credits in Braille.
Yes.
I thought that.
Because at first I'm like, what's going on here? And then I'm like, oh, I see what they're doing. And look, what's his name? Colin Farrell. Yeah, he's over the top, but he's insane. And he was solid in the movie. Like he played it that way, you know, on purpose. And I think it fits the character of Bullseye.
And the fact that did you know that Frank Miller has a cameo in the movie?
I did. Yeah, I did. And so does
Kevin Smith. Yeah, Kevin Smith has the more in your face cameo.
Yeah,
it's obvious, but Frank Miller, because so much of that movie is taken from almost that entire movie is taken from Frank Miller's run on Daredevil, which if you didn't know that Frank Miller had a run on Daredevil, shame on you. That's how DC found him. They saw him writing and drawing Daredevil, or at least writing Daredevil, and they were like, we want you. And he said, well, let me write The Dark Knight Returns and you have me. Yeah. So, you know, that's the story. And I need to go back because so much. And once again, so much of Frank Miller, because Frank Miller made such a imprint on the character. So much of the Netflix series is being influenced. I mean, they've already said that season 3 is going to be inspired by Born Again, which is another big time.
It is,
you know, Frank Miller storyline in Daredevil.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I had known next to nothing about Daredevil going into the movie. I just thought, oh, that looks cool. Like I saw the trailer and I'm like, that looks cool. Let's go see it. I told my friend, you know, it's a superhero movie. Let's go check it out. I saw it. I'm like, I need to read about this character. So the following Wednesday, I went to the comic shop and I said, what do you have on Daredevil? And, you know, months before, this is when I had just gotten back into comics, my comic shop owner had given me the Dark Knight Returns. He's like, well, you love the Dark Knight Returns? I'm like, yeah. He's like, Frank Miller wrote Daredevil too. And he gave me some of the Frank Miller stuff. And I was like, oh my God, this is great. And so aside from Spider-Man being, you know, the top Marvel character for me, Daredevil's number two for me personally because he has a disability and I do too. So the representation is, you know, it's a different disability, obviously, but the representation is something that I find fantastic. So I resonate with the character, and it's that movie. I think it is incredibly maligned and underrated, and it shouldn't be. It just shouldn't be, especially.
And you're the director. And you're talking about a character who has had some of the greatest comic book writers. Yeah. I mean, I think Batman. Only Batman can top the writers who have dealt with Daredevil. And in a lot of cases, it's the same writers. Because if you look at Daredevil, if you look at writers who have written both Daredevil and Batman, Kevin Smith, Ed Brubaker, Frank Miller, you know, these names. And then you get to see some of the other Daredevil writers like Jeff Loeb, who did Daredevil Yellow, who also did like Batman the Long Halloween, or Mark Waid, who did a spectacular run in the last 10 years of Daredevil. I mean, there have been Brian Michael Bendis did an incredible run on Daredevil. I mean, Daredevil, I feel like sometimes Daredevil only is rivaled by Batman in the industry big names who have tackled that character. And so I feel like it's a character who deserves your attention.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think, like I said, I will cheer, support, and vouch for that movie as long as I live, because I think it's much maligned. It's underrated and it doesn't deserve either. And Ben Affleck, I thought did a fantastic job.
And before we get off of Daredevil, I have to give a RIP Michael Clark Duncan as the Kingpin.
He was great. And it's different than like it's a different take than what Vincent D'Onofrio is doing, but both are valid and I think both are appropriate for the character.
Oh yeah, and even Michael Clark Duncan is entirely completely different from even the comic book version of Wilson Fisk.
Yeah.
But still, it's flipping Michael Clark Duncan.
And it captures the spirit of the character, which to me is the most important, right?
Exactly.
When you're making an adaptation. So I love this movie, and I'm glad you're in agreement. And I know Jordan likes it too. So amongst all his crazy opinions, you know, every once in a while, a blind
squirrel finds a nut.
Yeah, brilliant strikes him every so often. This is one of the times. Now, with the MCU, it's so vast and there's so much of it. So what I thought we'd do is I thought we'd run down, you know, our favorites and our least favorite, and then just talk a little bit about them, why they stand out. So
okay.
I know most people will start with, you know, there's a good segment of the audience that thinks every one of these films is epic, fantastic, better than the last. But realistically speaking, let's start in reverse. What are some of your least favorite MCU films?
Okay. Well, I will say, first of all, that I've been there since day one with the MCU.
Same as me. I
was there opening day for Iron Man because I actually knew who Iron Man was.
I did too.
I accidentally stayed through the credits to see the end credit scene with Samuel Jackson.
Well, you didn't know, because back then it wasn't publicized, was it?
It wasn't publicized, so I just happened to be sitting there, and then it happened, and as soon as I heard him say the Avengers Initiative, I lost my crap.
I did too.
So I will definitely say that for me, it's been a up-and-down relationship where I have very strong positive feelings through almost all of phase one. Mm-hmm. And then as we get into phase two, it gets rocky. And then we get into phase three, which we're currently in. And unfortunately, it's more of I'm more shocked when I actually enjoy one of their movies in phase three. Like, I go in expecting not to like them because of the turn they've made. Yeah. But when a good one pops up, I'm like, you made a good one. Yeah, thank you.
Like, keep going, please.
Yeah. Okay. So if you want me to start with my bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
Do you want just my bottom one, or do you want me to like how many from the bottom do you want me to give you in order?
Give me your least favorite five. You have five that you.
Okay. Of my five, and one of these is going to be highly controversial.
Okay.
Highly controversial. Okay. counting down from, you know, not quite the bottom all the way to the bottom.
Sure.
My number five from the bottom is Civil War.
Okay.
My fourth from the bottom is Thor Ragnarok.
Okay.
My third from the bottom is Thor The Dark World.
Fair enough.
My second from the bottom is Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm.
And my bottom of the barrel is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yeah. You know what? We're pretty close. I would probably... The only one I would flip-flop is I would put Iron Man 3 as being worse than... What did you have? Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yeah, so yes. I flip those two. But otherwise, I'm in 100% agreement with you there. Because here's what bothered me about Iron Man 3. And that is, they built me up. They had me believing for a large portion of this film that the guy who played Gandhi, right, was this mass terrorist. And I was buying it. And then they decided, let's get smart like Chris Nolan and do a plot twist, you know, the villain twist. And we find out that Ben Kingsley's character is just an actor playing the Mandarin. To me, it lost me when it did that. I'm like, why? You had what could have been one of the better MCU villains, and you just ruined it. And what we got was this fire-breathing Guy Pearce. That was just like, what am I watching here? Like, I couldn't believe what I was seeing in Iron Man 3 there. And I think the part about it that it was like, because three quarters of the time, he's not even in the suit, it's remote control. And I get that Robert Downey Jr. is probably not in the suit three quarters of the time anyway. But I'd like to believe that in the context of the movie that he is, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole movie felt like, what are those, the remote control toys, I can't remember the brand, but you know what I'm talking about. It's like I was watching Remote Control Man. Once I realized it, I'm like, okay, this is not, but the biggest offense to me was the Mandarin, because they had done such a good job of building him up that I just wasn't having the twist. And then at the end, when he's like, okay, you know, I'm going to blow up the suits for my love of Pepper. And I'm like, wait a minute. There's another Avengers. You know he's going to be back. This feels so – this declaration, this decision feels so forced. Like, it's not going to last. There's no – like, if this was truly Robert Downey Jr.'s last hurrah, I might have believed it. But because I knew what was coming, and because they telegraph and tell you everything that's coming in advance and who's in it, I was like – this loses any meaning that it has for me. I don't know if you had similar feelings on Iron Man 3 in that regard of why you disliked it.
A lot. I didn't like the kid. I get annoyed with, you know, let's introduce the super smart, adorable kid into the plot.
Yeah.
I was hoping for it was just. It was just a mishmash of stuff that I was just like, really? I mean, you had Iron Patriot, but it was just a paint job on War Machine. and you had the idea of the Extremis storyline, which is an awesome, cool, dark storyline in the comics. And I didn't recognize it. Iron Man 3 was the first MCU movie that I walked out going, I didn't like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you had me through all of phase one, and then your very first film of phase two, I just went, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And that was unfortunately kind of that's why I call phase two rocky, because it's like, there's some movies in phase two that I really enjoy. There's some movies in phase two that I think are just meh. There's some movies in phase two that I just hate.
Yeah.
And so it was, but phase two began the phase of I walked out of several of these movies going meh to I didn't like that. And And after phase one was just hit after hit after hit. And some people can say, and I'm not sure if it's fair or not, but this was the beginning of the Disney era. Like, this is when Disney bought Marvel.
That's very true, yeah.
So I don't know whether that's a fair thing to say, this is when it all went downhill. I can just say that from Iron Man 1 to the Avengers, I put phase one very high in my rankings of MCU movies.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's I feel like I think we pretty much said all we need to really say about Iron Man 3.
The thing that got me with Guardians 2 the most, and look, I'm everybody who knows me knows that I'm not averse to raunchy jokes or the like, but when Ego is doing that, you know, monologue or that. Where he's basically explaining himself to the group. And then it seemed like it droned on for about 5 minutes, where every 2 seconds, Drax was asking him if he had a penis. And I'm like, really? We're sticking on this? Like, it took me right out of the movie. And I thought the humor was, it was too much, especially where Drax was concerned. And with his interplay with Mantis, and how it was just so degrading. Like, every time he talked to him, it was so degrading. And it's like, okay, but there's a point where this stops being funny.
Yeah, and that's my biggest thing. Is like, it was, I got to the point where, it's like the, have you ever seen the movie Amadeus?
Yeah.
Okay, you know how the Emperor always goes, there's just, too many notes, you know, just cut a few out.
Yeah.
That's what I felt about Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I was like, there's too many jokes.
Yeah, I agree.
Cut some of these out. And it got to the point that I could predict when the joke was going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was like, serious moment, 3, 2, 1, dip, there's the joke. Serious moment, 3, 2, 1, there's the joke. And it got to the point that I could even tell you what the joke was going, in some cases, I could tell you what the joke was going to be.
You could telegraph them for sure, yeah. Because they had been the same the whole way through.
Yes. So that was my biggest – it was like they tried to take what they did in Guardians 1, which spoiler alert, I love the first one.
Yes,
and, and it was like – it had sequelitis where they tried to take everything that everyone loved about the first movie.
And
triple down. And, well, it's not –
we're not going to offer work. Anything new.
Right. With the exception of that, I really did enjoy Kurt Russell. He was really good in that movie.
He was great. It's just everything around him was kind of And I did like the relationship between what's his name now? Why am I blanking? The blue guy. Help me out.
Drax?
Mary Poppins.
Why, he's from Alabama, by the way.
Yeah, but why am I blanking on who it is?
Yondu.
That's thank you. Yeah.
Yes.
I did like that aspect of it, like his finale, and his.
Yeah. So that's it.
His death had some resonance. Quick hit on Thor Ragnarok. Way too much humor.
Even my wife saw that movie and she said it was trying to be funny, but it wasn't. Like, I was like,
I'm like, the movie is called Ragnarok. Like, that implies some grand scale stakes and seriousness.
It's the death of the gods.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, why is it seems like every third line of dialogue is a joke. And it was cool to a degree. It was fun seeing Hulk and Thor interact again. But it just, again, too overboard with the jokes on from Hulk. I mean, some of them landed, but most of them were like, really?
I didn't think Mark Ruffalo's he didn't feel like Bruce Banner in that movie.
No.
Not at all. And I know some of that was reshoots. So, like, you can even look at like the first trailer and the finished film, and you can see where there were a lot of something else that's starting to feel a little familiar. But there were obviously reshoots to make the movie quote funnier. And
oh boy. I totally get the Justice League thing. I get it.
But like you said, I was promised a film called Thor Ragnarok. I also felt like it was two different movies trying to be one movie, because there was the stuff taking place on Skaar, and then there was the stuff taking place on Asgard. And I thought for once I was finally going to get a cosmic Thor movie that took place in the Nine Realms. And then I just got this hodgepodge.
And a Flash Gordon imitation kind of thing.
Yes, yes.
Right?
And I didn't even think about that, but you were so right.
Yeah. And so the only other thing I'll say about Thor 2, I think, was on your list as well.
Yeah, Dark World, yeah.
Because it's one of my least favorite. Is just everything, if something that was, again, and here's the problem with, I think, two-thirds, and part of the problem with the first one, even though I like the first one quite a bit better than the other two Thors, but it doesn't feel grand scale enough. They want to go grand scale, but it feels limited. And that has to be, I don't even remember, I think it's Malekith, whatever, however you pronounce that. That has got to be one of the most one-dimensional cardboard villains I have ever seen in a superhero film.
And you want to know what? Christopher Eccleston, who played that character, would agree with you.
Yeah, I think because he hated it. He did it for the paycheck. He said, I did it for the paycheck.
Yeah, well, I also think that they also did a lot of, that was another movie that suffered from a lot of Marvel doing the Marvel way and cuts and reshoots and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because that was the movie that Patty Jenkins walked away from.
And thank God, because look where we got her.
I know, exactly. I think we came out better on that deal. But that was one of those movies that happened. And I think, and I'm not sure if Christopher Eccleston just did it for the paycheck or if there was more to his character and it was just removed later on.
Well,
I know
after the fact he said, in one of the interviews, he said, I was getting a paycheck. So,
yeah.
I don't know if he felt that way the whole way through, but at some point he did. Let's transition into some positive about the MCU.
Oh, absolutely. Because there's some movies in the MCU I truly adore.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned Civil War. I don't know if I put it in my bottom five, but it's somewhere in the middle. Like, it's, to me, it's just okay. But what specifically of it irked you? Because that's a biggie that I want to get your,
okay.
Not to get you in trouble with, I think it's Brent who loves that film, but yeah, I mean, you've probably had this debate with him ad nauseum anyway, so it's not going to make a difference. But tell us why, what irks you the most about that film?
Okay. I am going to be completely honest in my bias here.
Okay.
I went into that movie with a chip on my shoulder because it came out about a month after Batman v Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was tired of all the hate that Batman v Superman was getting. And here we come out with a Marvel movie that is suspiciously along the same lines as Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
And so I kind of pouted the whole movie, which is not a very mature thing to admit. But yeah, I actually went in to this movie going, impress me. Like I took in the very attitude I say I'm not supposed to take, but I did.
Yeah.
And then it didn't impress me. I thought the Spider-Man stuff was shoehorned in simply because they made the deal and they needed to go ahead and set up Spider-Man, because I knew Homecoming was coming.
Yeah.
So I knew that was shoehorned in, and it feels shoehorned in. I felt like the airport battle is an entire sequence of that movie that does zero for the plot.
Yeah.
It's just there to be there. And I will go back to a very common criticism with, it's not a Captain America movie. It's Avengers 2.5.
Yeah, it really is.
So one thing is, you set me up thinking that I was getting a Captain America movie, and that's not what that was. So those are some of my big issues with it. And then when it got to the end, just didn't care. Like, it just didn't feel like it mattered. Even my wife, when she was watching it, we watched it right before going to go see Spider-Man, because like she hadn't seen all the Marvel movies, and I was like, okay, these are the ones you have to watch before we go see Spider-Man.
Yeah, because it's impossible to do a 19. Can you imagine a 19 film rewatch every time there's a new film.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the last movie she had seen before Spider-Man Homecoming was Guardians of the Galaxy 1.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, we have to watch Age of Ultron. We have to – like, we can get away with just watching Age of Ultron and Civil War.
Yeah.
And then you're good. Like, I think we watched Ant-Man just for the fun – and we watched Ant-Man because he showed up in Civil War.
Yeah,
because it's fun and he shows up in Civil War.
Yeah.
So – and even when we watched it, my wife was like –
what is this?
Well, no, she was watching it going, this movie's kind of long. And this is the woman who's sat through Batman v Superman with me, like the 3-hour version.
Does she enjoy BBS?
Oh yeah. She's a huge Wonder Woman fangirl.
Good for her. Tell her I'm very happy to hear that.
But she was sitting through Civil War going, this is kind of long. And then when you get to the end where it's revealed that Zemo just wanted to kill the other Winter Soldiers, she actually said, well, that was kind of anticlimactic. Like, it was refreshing because watching it with her was literally the second time I was ever watching the movie, because after I saw it, I just kind of pouted about it.
Yeah.
I was pouting during it, not being very mature. But it was nice to hear somebody else kind of going, go, good, it's not just me. Okay, I'm not crazy here. Someone else feels this way.
I mean, to me, here's my issues with it. And again, I don't put it as low, but it's not anywhere high. It's sort of middle of the road. If I had to do like a ranking of everything, it's probably somewhere, you know, near to the bottom, but kind of in the middle. But one of my issues, again, you're right, it is very long. Spider-Man's cameo feels forced, although I do like Tom Holland, and we'll get up to that in a second. But one of the – just – you're right, the airport fight, it's like – first of all, it looks very small. It's supposed to be this big, grandiose thing, but it looks like it's shot in a back lot. Like, you can sense it. And the other thing is, as they're fighting each other, they're talking and quipping, and I'm like, well, what are the stakes here? If you're going to quip – and say, oh, but we're still friends, right? To me, there's no stakes here. And then, to me, that carries over in the end of the movie when, after nearly driving his shield through the heart, you know, of Tony's armor, he leaves him a phone and says, if you need me, call me.
I know. That bothers me, too. And that, like, really does, really? That really does.
Seriously? And then, what pissed me off, and tell me if this pissed you off, too. Tony knows that near the end, he knows that Winter Soldier was brainwashed, right? Cap says it wasn't him. He was being brainwashed. But Tony gets all upset because Winter Soldier killed his parents and goes after him, right? And
yes.
Everybody thought that was, oh, wow, what a motivation. Like, I heard people praising that moment. And I'm thinking, hold on a second. So Tony can go off on a guy that he knew was brainwashed for killing his parents, that had no control of himself. But you're telling me Batman can't have a change of heart because he's realized he's becoming just as bad as the person who killed his parents by carrying out his actions if he would have killed Superman? Like, I don't get that. Why it's okay for one to have a motivation and a reaction over the memory of their parents, and it's not okay for the other. That's what irritated me. I know they're not the exact same scenarios, but... it's kind of insane.
But the two films are more similar than people want to admit.
Yeah, and that just – to me, to this day, it's like, no. Like, I don't accept that complaint when you're going to give praise to the other one for using a similar ploy, just in reverse.
Now, I do, however, want to heap one shovel of praise on this movie. Sure. That I – it does something so much better – than the book whose namesake it has.
Yeah.
In the comic book, it is so heavy-handed in how Tony and Tony's side is the wrong side and the bad side. And Tony is manipulating the situation with Congress and the Superhuman Registration Act.
Yeah.
And it is so obvious that Captain America is on the side of the angels. And when the tagline for the Civil War event was, whose side are you on? And the book never gave you a chance to actually be on one side or the other,
yeah,
because the book was constantly telling you, but Tony's side is the bad side.
Yeah.
What the movie does well, and I am very pleased with it, is how no one's side comes off smelling like roses.
Yeah, you're not wrong if you pick either side.
You're not wrong because both sides have valid points and both sides have selfish, stupid motivations.
Yeah.
So you can argue one way or the other that, you know, Team Iron Man, Team Cap, but the truth is they're both doing things for the right reasons and they're both doing things for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
So the entire movie lives in this gray area that the book didn't even attempt to do. And that is something that I have to genuinely praise the movie for.
I'll agree with that. That was very well done, that aspect of it, for sure. So given that positive, you know, vibe, let's move on to our top five.
Okay. You're ready for my numbers?
Yes. Because okay. I'm pretty sure they're going to be close to mine, like your negatives were. So let's see. We have similar tastes.
Okay.
In superhero.
Okay. This is our Casey Kasem countdown to the top 100. Coming in at number five, Iron Man. Coming in at number four, The Avengers. Coming in at number three, Spider-Man Homecoming. Coming in at number two, Captain America, The Winter Soldier. And coming in at number one, Avengers Infinity War. Those are my top five.
Wow. I'm in pretty much agreement. I just don't know if I can see Infinity. I really, really liked Infinity War. My only issue ranking it is that I need to see how Avengers 4 plays out.
Okay. See, I am basing this just on the movie that I saw.
Okay.
If I'm basing this solely on the movie that I saw, that was the greatest experience I have had in an MCU movie.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'd probably slot Black Panther in one of those five for me. I'm not sure exactly where, but I'd probably put Black Panther in the five hole for me, because I really, really like that movie. But let's talk about since Iron Man kicked it off. I know you mentioned the post-credit scene, but give me some of your fondest memories of each of the movies you rolled off.
Okay, Robert Downey Jr. is one of those casting magics we've talked about.
Yes, for that, sure.
Where we're just gonna go, there you go. And of course, once again, it's one of the benefits that the Marvel Studios movies have had is that they're dealing with characters that the general audience knows jack about. So whoever is cast in these roles are these roles. One of the classic things we always say over the Suicide Squad cast series, and DC has such problems, is that these characters have been done a million times before and everyone's got their favorite version.
Yeah.
No one has their favorite version of these characters. This is the first version there's ever been of these characters. Now, as someone who knew who Iron Man was and read Iron Man comics, I thought Robert Downey Jr. was inspired casting.
Yeah.
So I was very, very pleased with the first movie. I thought Jon Favreau was an excellent directing choice, and I thought he brought a great sensibility to that first movie.
Yes.
I love Coulson.
Yeah.
Coulson was great through all the phase one. And I just thought it worked. And it is a much... If we talk about my problem with the Marvel movies is they've become much more jokey and juvenile, especially after the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, Iron Man doesn't suffer that.
No.
Iron Man has got some dark, dark moments in it. As far as a Marvel movie goes, I mean, I've seen darker, but still. It's got some serious moments. It calls Tony out in the carpet, but then you've got Robert Downey Jr. doing Downey Jr. and just being smooth and slick and just a joy to watch on screen. And so that's what I have to say about Iron Man 1.
I agree on all counts, too, as well. It's great.
What was my next one? My next one was The Avengers. It's The Avengers.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to talk about, yes, they did it first. They did a team-up movie first. And it was just comic booky. It was comic booky goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the last thing Joss Whedon has done that I absolutely
that you're on board with.
That I was absolutely on board with. Now, I've not gone back and rewatched the Avengers recently. I'm purely playing this on nostalgia for what I remember.
It does still hold up. I watched it before Infinity War. It does still hold up.
Okay. So it's a team up movie. It's the first time I got to see. It was a shared universe where finally all the characters combined.
Yeah.
And it did it, and it will have a special place in my heart for doing it. And then having the first ever tease of Thanos, where see that scene, and both times I saw that movie in theaters, the person I went with leaned over to me and said, "Okay, who is that?" Yeah. Because it wasn't like a, "Oh, I wonder who that is." It was a, "No, Scott, you know who this is. Tell me who that is.
I had that same reaction. People were asking, "Who is that?"
Yeah, and I love it. I love it's the tone of their voice. It's not, "I wonder who that is." It's, "No, dude, you know who that is. Tell me who that is."
And I'm like, and part of me is like, "Seriously?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, but you wouldn't know who this is.
You wouldn't know who that is." At my number three, Spider-Man Homecoming. I cannot decide whether Homecoming or Spider-Man 1 is my favorite Spider-Man movie, but they're neck and neck. Like, I need to do a rewatch to figure it out. And here's why. Here's what – because I've seen a lot of hate for Homecoming online lately, especially in the sort of the DC stan. But here it is. Here's what Homecoming does that not a single Spider-Man movie has been able to do before it. It nailed high school.
Yeah.
It nailed high school. Peter is supposed to be 15. And Tom Holland plays an awkward, dorky sophomore in high school. He's got the science smarts in him. Yeah. We can argue about the fact that Tony builds the suit for him. I can understand that part.
I'll get to that in a second. Yeah.
I'll give that. But if you want to talk about you finally portrayed these characters like they were actually in high school, they nailed it. It does feel like a John Hughes movie. And for me, that's a positive. Some people saw that as a negative. I saw that as a positive. They nailed the high school. So he's got the quippiness. He's got the awkwardness as Peter, but he's got the quippiness as Spider-Man. It's not as stinging as Garfield's quippiness, but I feel like it works. I think Tom Holland brings it, and you're going to be hard pressed to. I mean, until I saw Thanos in Infinity War, I mean, Michael Keaton as the Vulture is in the top tier of MCU villains. MCU villains. I would even say comic book movie villains.
Yeah,
Michael Keaton's Vulture is. Have you heard of the sequence in the film called From Doorbell to Door Slam?
Yes. That's the
– That.
Are we talking about the same sequence, the car – the in the car? The moment in the car?
From the moment that Peter rings the doorbell and Toons answers the door to the point that he gets out of the car and walks into the homecoming dance. That's Doorbell to Door Slam.
Yeah.
That entire sequence of that movie was like, oh, dear God. I was like, oh, dear God, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And so that's why I have Homecoming. I mean, it has a cute little nod to Miles Morales in it that I thought was like, oh, I see what you did there. Okay, that's fun. But I love it because it nails a mixture of like, you know, Peter and Spidey. I thought Tom Holland did a good job. I love the I love the high school aspect of it. There are other parts of it that I'm like, yeah, you don't have spider sense. Aunt May is, as much as I love Marissa Tomei, Aunt May is way too young.
Yeah, way too young,
but I still enjoy Marissa Tomei kind of being like a...
I feel bad when I'm attracted to Aunt May. I feel like I need about 5 cold showers and a couple of Hail Marys. It's like,
yeah, but it's kind of weird that, like, but with Marissa Tomei, it's like she's Marissa Tomei.
Yeah.
So she's attractive and sexy, but she's playing it like she's completely, she generally comes off like, no, I would believe that you have no idea why someone's like buying you food or something. Yeah. Like, she acts the part so well that.
It's just preconceived, at least for me, it's preconceived, you know, from what I've seen from before. Like the whole time I'm watching and I'm like, okay, I've seen the rest of her. This is not, I have to change my mindset. When I think of Marissa Tomei, it's like, brain, turn yourself in a different direction. Like I have to change my brain. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And if we're going to talk about score, as a valid criticism, well, in my opinion, a valid criticism of most MCU movies is their music and score are utterly forgettable.
Yes.
Michael Giacchino does a very memorable score where he even was able to include the Spider-Man.
Oh, I love that at the beginning. That was great. Yeah.
And for once a character actually has a character theme. Like you can hear Spider-Man's theme. Like he has a character theme. Like the Avengers have a theme. Like the only other score that tops it is Alan Silvestri's score for Avengers.
Yeah, it's a great score. It is. And so
it's a great score.
So it's Homecoming.
Yeah, so that's what I have to say about Homecoming
Go ahead.
I'm done. I've said what I have to say.
For me, I think you hit on all the points. I mean, for the first time, it's like, wow, Peter Parker is a high schooler. Because no offense to either of those actors, who I think brought great aspects of the role themselves and what they were asked to do. I never felt that either Tobey Maguire or
Andrew Garfield
were believable high school students. I couldn't fully commit to that idea. And aside from, the 1 minute they're in class or in the hallway, you never really get a sense of their high school experience for the most part. Here, the whole movie takes you through Peter Parker's high school experience. And we've all been on the field trips, right? We've all been to the dances. We know, having been through it, how awkward those things are. So you can resonate to that. It brings back memories of your own youth when you're watching that. I thought you're right. They did get a handle on Peter being a little bit, the science nerd, and I love that him and his buddy there, Ned? We're building the Millennium Falcon, was it? They had the Lego set. I mean, that's things nerdy teenagers do. We all did stuff like that. So that was very believable. I enjoyed the costume. I know some people have problems with it, but I thought it gave me a very Ditko feel to it.
And it did give him a very Ditko feel. You were right about that.
And how it had those, the little wings.
Yes, the web wings, or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, like the underarm, like the armpit webs that Ditko drew. Yes.
Yeah, those were cool to see realized on screen. And also, I know people, and I've given this complaint to a degree at some point, but the more I watch, my opinion somewhat alters. I was complaining that while Tony makes him the suit, you're kind of taken away from his ingenuity and intelligence. But when you actually rewatch and you see that he had that, that homemade suit prior to that, so he really did make his own suit. It's just it was already made when we first saw him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. If you want to say it, it's the first time ever that you have a Peter that both built the web shooters and designed the web fluid.
Yeah, yeah. And you were 100% right with Michael Keaton. He, aside from Thanos, which is a larger scale threat throughout the whole MCU to this point, I think he was the best villain. Like, he was just so good. And it's like, I was that guy that was in theaters with my 1989 Batman logo t-shirt on it saying, kick his ass, Batman, every time the Vulture and Spider-Man were fighting. I was that guy. I don't care. I'm not ashamed. But he was great. And that scene right there, I was legitimately terrified. I was like, what's going to happen here?
Oh, there was so much tension and stakes. And you're like, and the twist got me.
Yeah.
I did not realize that they were going to make Toomes Liz Allen's dad.
I didn't see it coming at all. I didn't see it coming at all. And I thought the battles with them were both visually appealing, but also they felt hard-hitting. Like you said, they had stakes. And I really appreciate it. There's a scene where Peter's buried under all the rubble, right? And then he has to lift it off of himself. And you see his face in the puddle where it's half his face, and you see the Spider-Man.
Oh, and that's a Ditko scene too. Yeah, that is straight out of Ditko.
And I said to myself, they did it. Like, they actually pulled that. I said, that's great. But even his motivations of how he got the weaponry and built his suit made sense in the context of the MCU. I thought it was phenomenal. And so, like I said, this just felt like a Spider-Man we hadn't seen, because we hadn't seen the high school aspect of it played out to this degree. And I think it's a smart move to carry that through the entire series of however, you know, whether it be a trilogy or whatever. Marvel said that at least for the three, he's going to be in high school. So, and I think that's a smart move. I really do. But so I agree with you there. And then I think your other one was Infinity War. You said you were judging it as a single film. And if I'm judging it based on that, I agree with you. I liked a lot of the interactions, the sort of quote unquote team ups that they did throughout the film. Like, you know, when Doctor Strange with Iron Man, I'm a little bummed that they didn't put a Sherlock joke in there.
I think it was, part of me is like, I'm bummed, but then part of me is like, oh, that would have been so obvious.
Yeah, it's you're right. It is a double-edged sword. Because I'm like, you know what, on second thought, the way you guys handle jokes, that's probably a good thing. But, you know, like, just like the simple thing when he introduces himself to Spider-Man, where he's like, well, I'm Doctor Strange. And he goes, oh, no, he goes, I'm Peter Parker. And he goes, I'm Doctor Strange. He goes, oh, we're using code names? I'm Spider-Man, right? So.
No, we're using our made-up names. Yeah, I'm Spider-Man.
Yeah, so that was, you know, something like that was funny. I thought Thor with the Guardians, like, if you're gonna go funny with Thor, that's the pairing to put him with.
Well, I thought you know, the guys who wrote Infinity War, I mean, the same guys who wrote Winter Soldier,
yeah,
who also wrote Civil War. Basically, they wrote all the Russo movies, and it was like. They wrote the best versions of all these characters.
And,
like, the Guardians were funny, but not too funny.
Yeah.
Doctor Strange was more of a badass in Infinity War than he was in his own solo movie.
Oh, 100%. No joke. I don't dislike Doctor Strange.
I really enjoy Doctor Strange, to be honest with you. So
it's entertaining, but the first – I had to watch it two times. I fell asleep the first time. I don't know what was wrong with me that particular day, but I fell asleep in the theater.
Oh, I see. I saw an IMAX 3D, and that was a movie to watch in IMAX
3D. I didn't see it in 3D the first time. The second time.
Oh.
The first time I was like, wait a minute, damn it, I fell asleep. I paid, you know, $13 for a nap. I could have done that at home. So I had to go back and rewatch. It was solid. It's not one of my all-time favorites, but it's solid. But he was more of a badass in this.
My favorite interaction is when, like, Tony's like, who do you think you are? He's like, I'm protecting your reality, douchebag.
Yeah,
you
know, it's even Tony's banter, as much as I don't like funny ha-ha Hulk, even Tony's banter with him when he's like, you know, you need something about performance anxiety, and he's like, don't embarrass me in front of the magicians.
Don't embarrass me in front of the wizards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was funny. So all the dynamics felt, you know, the character interplays felt like they worked here. But then it was so grand scale, and there were stakes. Now, my issue is the people, the main Avengers that they killed off, we know they're coming back. I mean, we know Far From Home. Is that what the sequel's title?
Yeah, Spider-Man Far From Home, yes.
It's coming. We know that. It's been announced. We know it takes place after Avengers. So we know he's coming back. there's no way in hell after making $799 million worldwide or domestically, you're going to keep Black Panther dead. No chance in hell. So my question is, when they, the only thing that sort of has me, like, I love the Infinity War as we got it, but what's going to ultimately prove the long-lasting longevity of its ranking, because it is high up there for me as well, will be the end result. If nobody ends up dying or coming out unscathed in Avengers 4, you're going to lose me a little bit, because, again, it goes to stakes, right? If everybody comes back, like, to me, and I'll just say it, I'm picking three people to die by the end, or to be unable to continue as their current iteration. I think it's going to be Hawkeye, because he actually just signed on to be part of the Spawn reboot. And I think he's the most, he's the obvious one to kill off. I think Captain America, Chris Evans, wants to be done. So I think he's done. And it wouldn't shock me if Thor ultimately bites it in the end by Avengers 4. So, like, I'm not saying kill them all, because that would be awesome. I just say I need some stakes by the end. If they're all brought back, and you know what I'm saying, if it's too clean, if the resolution is too clean, it's going to diminish Infinity War. But I did love that. Like, this is one of the few Marvel movies, in addition to Winter Soldier, where I felt, okay, the stakes matter here.
Right. It's like, because at the end of Winter Soldier, like, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s gone.
Yeah.
Like, which is part of the problem I have watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I stopped a long time ago.
Oh, I finally finished season 5 yesterday, literally yesterday. It took me that long to finish it.
Well, God bless you for actually staying the course.
I'm not going to watch season 6. Okay. Like, season 5 ended in a way that you're like, you thought you were over after season 5. You can tell. Oh, totally, you thought you were over. But yeah, Winter Soldier, like, quick shot to Winter Soldier, that felt like a 70s political thriller.
That's
which
one
was
of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was my number 2. It was my number 2. But the fact that Robert Redford is the bad guy in it, and he was in, like, All the President's Men, which is, like, one of those classic 70s political thrillers. It's great. Infinity War, I think the genius of Infinity War was basically the story is being told as if Thanos is the main character. Like, Thanos is your protagonist.
Finally, yeah.
I mean, really, you're following Thanos's journey through this movie. The heroes are there, but you're really following – it's really Thanos's story. So you take your main villain and you make him the main character of the story, and you're really following his journey through the movie. And the heroes are kind of just ancillary to Thanos' story. And you give Thanos – and as horrible and as awful as Thanos is, you kind of sympathize with him occasionally.
Yeah, you can, like, tell that it really hurt to go through –
kill Gamora?
Yeah.
And it's just one of those that you're like, I kind of want you to win. I kind of want you to wipe out half the universe.
I was on his side for a portion of it, but then what I did was, I don't know if you saw it, there was this link where if you click the link, it would tell you if you lived or died, because
right.
And I died, so I was like, screw you, Thanos. I hope you get your ass kicked in part 4. But yeah, no, there was definitely a sympathetic nature to him.
So I totally, like, I was just like, wow, they went there. Like, it was so funny watching. Okay, funny story. Mm-hmm. I told this on a Patreon episode on the network, but I'm going to tell it here for your listeners to hear. It was so funny sitting there when the movie was over, and how pissed off everyone was around me. Yeah. Like, that's the ending? Oh my god! Like, people were cursing, people were angry, they were walking out, and I was sitting here going, I had a damn good time.
Yeah, I was like, read a comic, damn it. But.
It was like, wow, this is what it's like watching a DCEU movie for other people.
Yeah. I'm like, now you know what I go through sometimes.
And it was just like, I was here going, I'm so happy with the way this movie turned out.
Yeah.
And everyone else was so pissed off about it that I was just kind of like, okay.
I was like, you know what? That's what you get for making fun of DC all the time. Good for you. Enjoy your misery, because I'm loving this. But yeah, so I agree with you. As of right now, I will rank it as the, you know, I will give it its props as you know, being its own thing. But I just hope, like I said, I hope the payoff is.
I definitely think that anybody who was not killed using an Infinity Stone is actually dead.
Yeah.
Like Loki.
He's gone.
No, dude. Yeah, he's gone. No, Loki's gone.
If he comes Loki. Back, I'm actually going to be angry. Like,
no, me too. No, he was choked to death.
Yeah.
There was no Infinity Stone used to kill Loki. So,
and I think it's Vision is gone too. Yeah, I'd be willing to wager it.
I'm not sure because he had to turn back time to kill Vision. So,
okay, maybe you're right. You're right. Yeah.
So you've got an out there if you want to. Anyone who got disintegrated is coming back. I know that.
Yeah.
But yet it still didn't cheapen the moment for me because I was still empathetic in the moment that it was happening.
I totally bought when Tony got stabbed, or I think it was yeah.
Oh, I thought he was,
I'm like, all right, he's done. I called it. I was patting myself on the back. And then I'm like, oh, come on, man, I had bets on this. but yeah, no, I agree with you. So I will give it props as its own thing. But just in terms of honorable mentions, I want to give a shout out to Ant-Man, the first one, because
I enjoy that movie. I don't care what crap people give to it. It was a heist movie and it was funny.
Because yeah, based on the trailer, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like this, but I end up really having a fun time with it. I love the visuals of how they did the shrinking. And all that, so I think it works. And Paul Rudd is great. I know some people had problems with Luis, but I liked him.
I'm sorry. The fact that he gets the very first mention of Spider-Man in the MCEU.
Yeah. There's a guy who what did he say? There's a guy who climbed.
There's a guy who climbed out on walls.
Yeah. So I love the way he told his stories. But yeah, the heist aspect of it and sort of the passing down of the mantle, you know, the Ant-Man mantle.
Oh, my God. And talk about some of the greatest de-aging known to man, watching Michael Douglas in that first opening scene.
That actually looked really good. And then you compare that to what they did with Patrick Stewart in Origins
Wolverine. X-Men and Wolverine, right.
So, but we won't go back there. But so I got to give honorable mention to Ant-Man. And I really like the Edward Norton Hulk.
Thank you. I do not know why people give so much crap to The Incredible Hulk. Go back and watch that movie. It is a solid movie.
You know, and you know what it reminds me? It gives me that Bill Bixby feel.
Yeah, they even used the Bill Bixby origin.
Yeah, and there was a bit of the theme in there.
The Lonely Man theme plays in the movie, absolutely.
And I'm sucker for funny. That show, by the way.
Well, because it was funny, leading up to watching that movie, I started watching the Bill Bixby show.
Yeah.
So I picked up on all the homages, and of course, the second Lou Ferrigno cameo.
Oh, yeah. I'm a sucker for the Bill Bixby Lou Ferrigno Incredible Hulk. I will watch that till the cows come home.
I do want to, as we're kind of wrapping up, I do want to give a little bit of shout out because it's kind of connected, sure. Even though some people argue, to the Marvel Netflix series.
Yeah.
Which ones do you like? I adore Daredevil.
I do.
And the Punisher.
Yeah. Punisher was more of a slow burn, but when it picked up, it really.
Oh yeah, those last four or five episodes.
Oh, and that last fight, my God!
Oh, God. Ooh, ooh, and that actor who plays Billy is also in Westworld on HBO.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, he is so, you just love to hate him.
And that Daredevil Hulk, by the way, I gotta give a shout out to that Daredevil hallway fight from the first season.
Oof. Oh no! For me, it was the episode with the car door. Wilson Fisk in the car door.
Oh, yeah, that was kind of gross. Yeah, that was cool. Yeah.
Oh, but that was the episode that I just went, I'm afraid of you now.
Legitimately, you are. You're right.
I will go ahead and say Luke Cage. I have not seen season two of Jessica Jones or season two of Luke Cage. I am desperately behind.
I will say that I enjoyed Luke Cage season two quite a bit. Jessica Jones wasn't my cup of tea season two.
Well, season one of Jessica Jones, the only reason I kept watching it was David Tennant. He was the only reason watching that show.
He was a great villain. And that's
he's fantastic.
And that's what's lacking in season two, is the villain.
Okay. Season one of Luke Cage, I like the first half, not the second half, because I love I love Cottonmouth.
Oh, you're gonna. I think you'll personally. I think you'll enjoy season two a lot more.
Okay, good to hear. Good to hear. Iron Fist. I think the only reason that I finished it was because Defenders was coming, and I actually enjoy Defenders.
I enjoy Defenders, but Luke Cage. I mean, sorry, Iron Fist.
No. But I will still rank every season of Daredevil. And the best part about Defenders is it feels like Daredevil season 2.5.
Yeah, and I will say that as a martial artist, Iron Fist is offensive. It offends me. Because none of the martial arts is good. Like even you can tell it's a stunt guy, and it's like, no, I'm not buying this. But I do, and I do like Defenders. I enjoy that. And I will take Netflix's Elektra over. She's a better Elektra than Jennifer Garner. I will say that.
Yes.
As much as I adore Jennifer Garner.
Right. Well, she's also, she actually looks Greek. So
yeah. There's an ethnicity there, which is nice.
Yes. Nice.
Before we wrap up, I do want to get your thoughts on a couple of things that we have coming, Marvel-wise. What are your thoughts on? I mean, we can't speak to Captain Marvel because we just don't know anything about it much. But I'm excited for it. Another female led superhero film is a good thing for me. And of course, Avengers 4. But what are your thoughts on the developments with? First of all, are you intrigued by the animated Into the Spider-Verse?
Yes, I was not intrigued by it until we got that first full trailer. Yeah. And then once I saw that first full trailer, I went, I'm in. I mean, and have you heard the news that Nick Cage is going to be Spider-Man Noir?
Yeah, I heard that recently, and it's like, wow.
Wow. Well, see, I love Spider-Man Noir. I never read the comic, but I played him in the Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions game for the PS3.
Yeah.
So I am – now that I'm realizing that when they say Into the Spider-Verse, they really do mean Into the Spider-Verse because we've seen Spider-Gwen, and now we see Spider-Man Noir.
Yeah.
I am very – I want to see this movie, and I want to see it now.
I
never read Miles Morales, but I love the dynamic that him and his dad seem to have, like with the whole like, tell me you love me, say well, it.
I was cracking up for that whole monologue. Like, it was great.
And then when he finally says I love you, he goes, that's a copy. And I'm just like, I love
it's
that.
Let me embarrass, like it's like he loves his kid, but he's. You know, he's got to know that that's embarrassing him, and he's okay with that. So it's cool on all levels because we've all experienced that, and I'm sure you want to hear from your son that you love him too. So I mean, it's the reaction is justified on both sides. It's relatable on both sides. So cool.
I am super, like when it was first announced, I was like take it or leave it. But once I saw that first full trailer, I was like, I'm sold. I am there.
And the animation is so.
The animation is intriguing.
Yeah, it's. It's refreshingly different, so I'm on board with that. So much to see in December, I'm gonna go broke at the movies. But and then what about the recent? Okay, so two things I want to ask you before we close. Venom, what are your thoughts?
I'm there.
Me too.
I'm there because of several reasons. One, it's R-rated, isn't it? Or they're planning on it being R-rated?
That was my anticipation. I'm not 100% sure, though.
Okay. As far as you're making a Spider-Man-less Venom movie, you're bringing in the Life Foundation. You got Tom Hardy. It's in San Francisco. It's like you're checking on the boxes so far.
Yeah.
And that first full trailer, like the one where it ends on the "We are Venom."
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, damn, that suit looks good.
I love the way they handled it too, like that it was two personalities and it went back and like, that was cool the way they.
And you can hear the voice. You can hear the voice of the symbiote. Mm-hmm. So I'm there for Venom. I once again, I'm a big Venom fan. I'm a 90s kid. And you put Tom Hardy in the movie, it's like I'm good. And then you go deep enough to mention the Life Foundation,
oh, yeah.
And I'm like
actually. Now that we're on the subject, I know we're more read DC kind of stuff, but if you're going to venture into current Marvel stuff, read the new Venom series. I think you'll dig it.
Okay.
And check out the Immortal Hulk, the new one. You'll dig it. If you're a fan of the Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno stuff, you will dig this arc. So those are two recommendations I'll make.
Okay. So what's your second question?
The other question is, what is your take on this whole Morbius situation? Jared Leto, starring as Morbius? Are you on board for it?
Excellent, excellent casting, in my opinion. I am apathetic towards the movie itself right now until I know something about it.
Sure, fair enough.
I mean, it's one of those that's like, I'm not asking for a Mobius movie, but I don't have to ask for it. Will I see it? Of course.
Yeah, my one theory way... is nobody ever asks for it. Well, we do. We ask for Man of Steel all the time. But typically, nobody asks for a particular movie. They're made because the IP is viable. And so all it is now is sell me, do your job. And if it's something I'm sort of, you know, in the middle with, do your job and sell me with a good trailer and I'll be there.
And like I said, but I think the casting is spot on, I can't complain about that.
Yeah, I just so, I just hope that it holds true and it doesn't affect his participation with the Joker in the long run.
You heard the news today that that Desmond, I mean, he's literally going to be in two movies in two different franchises that are coming out in the same month.
Yeah, so that's true.
Let's stop with this internet hogwash that because you're in one movie doesn't mean you can't be in another.
I definitely know that's doable. It's just I hope that they stick to their guns and have those things come to fruition, because I really do need to see him again as the Joker, because I want to see more of that.
To be honest, I still want to see what Ayer's original version of Suicide Squad looked like.
Yeah, I know, but we're going to campaign for more than one full version of the movie. And we're,
it could be all part of the same campaign where we all just campaigned by Warner Brothers, stay out of the way.
Well, that's a campaign I'll sign 12,000 petitions for that one. Just leave the filmmakers alone, damn it. But okay, good. So it's I wanted to get your thoughts on those two Spidey options, because we've all three of us said at the beginning that Spider-Man was our main guy. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. This was a lot of fun. It's time to plug something. So go ahead, plug your stuff, Scott.
Okay. Well, if you don't know who I am Scott. You can find me on Twitter at ScottDC27. I am one half of the Suicide Squad cast, a weekly news podcast dedicated to DC entertainment, but with a focus on the movies of the DCEU. We are a member of the Suicide Squad cast network, so please go on over to SuicideSquadCast.com, where you can find the Suicide Squad cast, DC TV Squad cast, Fans Without Borders, and DC Comics Squad cast. Whether it's movies, TV, comics, or just general geekery that can cross all the lines, we've probably got a show for you. And hit us up on Twitter. We love interacting with fans. I interact with these two numbskulls all the time. Sometimes I have to mute Jordan because I just can't take it. Sometimes I have to mute you, Adam, but it's just not as often as Jordan. It's fine. Yeah. You know, I get over it and then I move on. So
no, but it's your podcast network is great. I encourage people to listen to all the podcasts on the channel, especially if you're behind on comics. You can get caught up real good on the comic side of things as well, which is something a lot of podcast networks don't offer. So good on you for having that aspect covered as well. And if you guys can donate to their Patreon, it's worth the extra the extra perks. In the meantime, if you want to find me and talk to me on Twitter, it's at Superhero Sci-Fi. I tell you Jordan's handle, but he's currently, for some glitch, blocked out of Twitter. I like to think it's because he rambles on about Batcat too much all the time, and they finally had enough. But he'll be back on Twitter eventually, so he'll give you the plugs when he's back. But until next time, have a wonderful week and a wonderful weekend. So long, everybody.
Bye, guys.